good evening.
Good evening.
All right, we're glad that you're here.
Sorry, excuse me.
However, we have a conflict. Unless somebody knows everybody who's in here, we cannot have a meeting. Is there anybody who knows everybody? All right. And as much as we know that somebody knows somebody, then we will carry on. Let me suggest to you that my name is James Peel. I serve as mayor of Powellsville. I serve under the auspices of Gerald Waters, who's sitting there, Carlisle Poggett, who's just behind me, Miss Hattie Ashley, who's just behind me, and Miss Danielle Williams, who keeps me straight daily. We have, in our absence, Mr. Claudia Wilson, who maintains the cosmetics of the town and other things that go wrong physically. We anticipated you. We didn't anticipate as many of you as we got, and you can share. We beg your indulgence as we do this thing tonight, and hope that you share with each of us, with each other, your concerns, and let's do it cordially and in order. We also are privileged to have our county government with us. Some of it is still coming in. And they have prepared an agenda for us all, and we will adhere to that agenda under the directions of Commissioner Ron Wesson, who is chair of the Board of Commissioners at this. All right, whenever you're ready.
Great, great. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to call to order the February the 10th meeting of the Board of Commissioners here in Powellsville. And I'd first like to thank Mayor Peel for welcoming us here, and we're delighted to be here. And I want to welcome all of you here. I know a lot of you are from this area, from Powellsville or the surrounding municipalities. We're delighted to have you. You know, we take our meetings on the road to many of the municipalities. It's our way of honoring all of you. Rather than you always having to come to us, we'd like to bring our meetings to the people, and that's important for us. So we're delighted to be here. And with that, we're going to open up the meeting, and I've already called it to order. I'm going to ask Commissioner Bazemore to lead us in the invocation and the Pledge of Allegiance.
Hey, will you bow your head as I pray? Dear wise and loving Father, first let me say thank you on behalf of all who are gathered here today. Thank you for your many abundant blessings. I pray for the mayor, county manager, for the various level of town officials and county officials, and in particular for those assembled here today. I'm asking that you, O Father, would graciously grant us wisdom to govern amid the conflicting interests and issues of our times. Give us, O Lord, a sense of welfare and true needs of our people. A keen thirst for justice and rightness. O Lord, give us confidence in what is good and fitting. Give us the ability to work together in harmony, even when there is disagreement. I pray for the agenda set before us this evening. Please give the assurance of what would please you and what would benefit those who live and work in and around our beloved county. It is in your most blessed name I pray. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Amen.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have a few people at the door. Please come on in if you will. Thank you, Commissioner Bazemore, for that invocation. And again, we always open up our meetings with what we call a public comment section. There are two. one at this place in the meeting, and one near the end. These public comments, we limit the comments to 3 minutes. So any citizen can come forward, give us your name, give us your address, and any comments that you have, please share them directly with us. If you don't get to say all you want to say here in the 3 minutes, remember we have one at the end. Same thing for public comments. So I'm going to open the floor for public comments. Any citizen, please come forward.
I want to make sure that I was clear, because I have an interest in Bertie County, but I am not, I am not a resident of Bertie County.
Pastor Barber, we know you well. So just give us your name and the fact that you are a pastor here in the community, and we're good with that.
My name is Pastor Barber, and I am a pastor here in Bertie County. And I wanted to speak to this council. I had written down a state, but the allotted 3 minutes does not allow me the time to say all that I would like to say to the council. Certainly we acknowledge your continued support and service that you have rendered to this great county. So I'm going to go straight to business. Myself and some other citizens who either work or live in Bertie County, some are present here today, came here to voice our opinion of a proposed resolution for Bertie County that deals specifically with our Second Amendment rights to bear arms. First, we would like to say we are grateful and content with the similar resolution that was passed in 2013 and believe it is sufficient for the cause of home protection and self-defense. Secondly, let me state that our Second Amendment right does not, and I repeat, does not give anyone a right to carry a weapon whenever and wherever one may choose. My fellow citizens who believe that their Second Amendment rights are violated in regards to this are in error. In the Supreme Court Heller case, the late Honorable Justice Antonin Scalia emphasized to us that the right secured by the Second Amendment is not unlimited, and prohibiting the carrying of firearms in sensitive places was indeed constitutional. However, many local governments have considered a proposed resolution which is similar to the one that's going to be brought forth on today. I would like to just uncover or reveal the proposed language of the resolution to this council that its citizens may be able to fairly judge the most appropriate measure for the safety of our county. First, and it's written constitutional rights protection county, but that's the same thing as saying Second Amendment sanctuary, okay? And a Second Amendment sanctuary actually opposes what is deemed as red flag laws. There are four main things to look at when this resolution comes forth. Universal gun background checks, high capacity magazine bans, assault weapon bans, and let me just say, unrestricted carry of assault weapons would not be deemed as friendly for Bertie County. And then there are red flag laws. Red flag laws are was brought forth by Sandy Hook, showing that there were similar red flags that would be shown when you had the shooter at Sandy Hook's. And that's where red flags laws came along. The purpose of the red flag law is to allow law enforcement to petition a state court to order the removal of firearms in the event that it's believed that the person that has used the firearms until it's proven that they're not deemed dangerous to themselves or others. This normally is done by a mental health screening, and We're living in northeastern North Carolina. We're already at a point where mental health evaluations and all, that's something that we already do not, that we need in our area. So I want to say that. Red flag laws, they protect our schools from active shooters. They protect our citizens from safety, who, you know, those citizens who are shopping at maybe a Walmart or a retail store. Red flag laws protects our voting polls from intimidation. Red flag laws protects our churches and places of worship from demented people like Dylan Roof, who carried a massacre at a church in Charleston, South Carolina. 9 members who attended Bible study. Red flag laws protect suicidal teenagers. Red flag laws protect our law enforcement officers who put their lives on the line daily, 24/7. I speak to the council and I ask the council that you would consider any approval of such a resolution.
Thank you, Pastor Barber. I know you were a law enforcement officer in this area for how many years?
35 years, retired.
Thank you very much. Floor is now open for any other citizens who'd like to make comments.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Nayland Collier, retired doctor of veterinary medicine, Bertie County. I'm here about your road maintenance. And my neighbor Shirley Taylor asked me to come and speak. I live on Pintail Drive. The state of North Carolina calls it the ETJ zone. But in my opinion, a better term would be the Twilight Zone. Twilight Zone. ETJ zone is a misnomer. We are caught between the town of Windsor and the county of Bertie. We live in a subdivision where we own lots, but we do not own the road. And we found this out just a few years ago when we had meetings about rezoning, and we were told about the ETJ zone. We're in a situation where I've been living there, I think, since 2003. We all built out there on the promise that the road was going to be paved. Understand that the owner set the road up to the North Carolina DOT standards in order to be paved. Now, I cannot tell you why it was not, because I've been told a lot of different things by a lot of different people. But I can tell you, whatever it is, it is political. Political. So I heard rumors that you might do something about some of the roads that I call, and I don't be negative, but some of the slum roads here. I was on the planning committee for 6 years for Bertie County, and I know about the roads going into these trailer courts that are not passable for emergency vehicles and things of that nature. And maybe you're going to do something about that. But here we are, 13 homeowners on Pendale Drive, and we are just left in the dark. We have no one representing us. The owner owns the road. We own the lots. And where do we go? I think I met with a youth, you know, a few years ago about what we do. That's why I say we are caught in the Twilight Zone. We need some help. What is our next step to try to get the road paved? You know, holes in the road, holes in the road, holes in the road. That's all. So we need some help. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, for clarification, is Pintail Drive part of the Creekside?
Creekside.
Okay, so
we're in the ETJ.
We're going to be discussing that later on.
You are.
Yes.
In the ETJ.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things, and we have early on the appointments part of our agenda, a public hearing concerning the public roads ordinance. But what we have dealt with is roads that are deemed to be unsafe, unpassable for emergency, sheriff department, EMT, that kind of thing.
Right.
But really, what it boils down to, it's generally it's the responsibility between the folks who bought lots and the road owner, generally, to try to work out some amenable way to doing it. I know it's not always easy, right? The way we stepped in is when those parties could not work that out, and the road was deemed to be a safety hazard for the citizens who live there. So you see the difference in the two situations in the neighborhood. So we had to step in and protect the lives of those folks who lived on in those lots, in those houses, where we could not get to them. We had instances where EMT trucks broke down, got stuck, sheriff department couldn't get to people out there for safety reasons. So this is a little bit different. But I would say the place to start is the dialogue with also being in the ETJ with the town of Windsor and also with the road owner to see if there, if he built the DOT standards, I think probably the thing that's holding up is who's going to pay for the paving of it, right? Many ways that possibly could be worked out, but where we are was a bold step on our part to do what we're doing, so but we'll take that under advisement.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now I understand we're even farther in the Twilight Zone.
Any others?
Yes, sir.
Yes, please, come forward.
Thank you. I worked along. I didn't study this situation. I got short notice on this, but I'm here to speak about protecting the Second Amendment. I'm just shocked, really. So I didn't have a chance to study this. I'm just shocked.
Make sure you give us your name and address. So
I'm sorry. I'm the Brother Willard Carney, Peter's Catholic Church. I'm in Maryhill, North Carolina. I've been in the North Carolina since 2007. Spent some time in New York. I'm very happy I'm here. I am a gardener. I've got one at home. That's for frivolous animals that might want to come into my property. But otherwise, I feel safe with these protectors that are standing here to protect our Second Amendment. These guys here, I think they do a great job. I feel safe among them. If I walked in here and everybody had an AR-15, I'd be a little leery. I don't know about you, but I'd be a little leery. But with these guys standing here, I could walk in freely. No problem. Sometimes I've thought about getting a concealed carry, but for what? Somebody in source bag just walk away? Pray for them. That's what I got to say. I speak in the shadow of Reverend Trinity Bob, and we are concerned. That's why we're here. I feel safe. No, he feels safe. I don't know anybody that doesn't feel safe here. But there may be some. Get a concealed carry. It's available to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Any others? Yes, please. Come forward.
Mr. Chairman, honorable commissioners, Mr. Mayor, honorable councilman, and the high sheriff. Good to see y'all here. I'm Gary Terry, chairman of the Burke T. County Republican Party. You need my address?
We know you. We know you.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak. I haven't read the resolution that's being talked about, but I'll just summarize my statements very briefly. The Burke T. County Republican Party strongly supports the Second Amendment. The U.S. Constitution is not a living, breathing thing. It's solid. It's rock solid. The laws of this country, our very foundation of this country is built on it. And I don't see anything changing. So, long story short, again, I'll reiterate, the Burke T. County Republican Party strongly supports the Second Amendment and would oppose any moves to weaken it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Floor is still open. Any other citizens like to come forward? Please.
Do not know me. My name is Baron Riddick. My concern is in dealing with the DOT road situation. I live on 1235 from Center Grove Road on back to the stop sign. They paved the road as far as Center Road, and when they got to the Center Road intersection, they stopped completely. And that road is full of potholes. It's going more damage to every person in the car that traveled that road. My concern to Mr. Wesson and the board is, why didn't they complete the other end of that road? Thank you.
I think I know a little bit about that in my history of Bertie County. It was considered when that road was originally paved, but the owner of that property that it would have crossed did not want to have the road run across his property, and so he decided that he was going to block the paving of it. He had that right at that time. A lot of folks wanted him to change his mind, and it would have been better access to the road, right?
This
and DOT, state. That's
capital.
Right.
What,
yeah, but part of it runs across private property that was not obtained by DOT when they were planning to do the road. So DOT stopped the road right there and did not take it any further in opposition to that. So that's my understanding of the history. It goes back a long, long ways.
How did you get the first sheet of asphalt?
I can't answer that question. My understanding is that DOT decided to respect the rights of that landowner and to end it where they did.
But you
that was years ago.
I do. It's been paid one time.
Right. So what I would suggest is that if it's going to be paved, it's going to have to be brought and kept to DOT standard. That's something between to DOT, not the county. The county does not make those decisions on those kinds of roads. That is DOT.
Okay, so
I would take it to them and express your interest.
So the person that is keeping this from happening, he's still living?
I don't know that at all.
What's the name
that
of
was
the
many
road?
Many years ago.
Center Grove Road.
Center Grove.
1235.
Mm-hmm.
It stops at Center Grove intersection, and beyond that to the stop sign, it's changed over to Brickmill Road.
That is
so
correct.
From there to there, you got a pothole, and it came out with bags of asphalt to fill the pothole. Well, you can imagine how long that lasts with the trucks and the cars on the traffic that we have going towards the level.
Right, and I don't know if that was the landowner who did that or if someone else did it. I couldn't tell you, but I would discuss that with DOT, see what they would advise. And if it's anything we can do once you go there, then let us know.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Hearing none, I will close the public comment section at this time. But remember, whatever you hear during the course of this meeting, we will have another public comment section at the end of the meeting. So please feel free. Take some notes. If you have any questions, you can join us. Next is the appointment section of our reports. And this is a public hearing amendment of road safety and maintenance ordinance. And we had to advertise, we advertised this today, and I want to read the maintenance ordinance to you so you can all understand. This is a public hearing today in response to the amendment of this road safety and maintenance ordinance. So I'm going to read it for the record. The Bertie County Board of Commissioners will hold a public hearing to provide citizens an opportunity to comment on a proposed amendment to the Road Safety and Maintenance Ordinance concerning a change to Section 305 that allows road owners who are in violation and either live outside of Bertie County or live inside the county but against whom personal service by the sheriff is unsuccessful to be served by any of the acceptable means of service set forth and approved in Rule 4 of the North Carolina Rule of Civil Procedure, as long as the property is also posted with a notice of the violation by the Sheriff's Department of Bertie County. When any of these means of service are used, the public hearing has been set for today, Monday, February the 10th, 2020, at 6 o'clock p.m., and will be held in Powellsville Town Hall, 105 East Main Street, Powellsville, North Carolina. So this is the amendment so that if a person who owns that road that the sheriff is trying to serve is outside of this area, we can use other means to reach that person and serve them. So that's the main change to the ordinance. Any comments on that, on the road ordinance or this change? Hearing no comments from the citizens, I do need a motion to approve.
I make a motion we approve that.
It's been moved. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Moved and properly second that we accept the change to the amendment to this road safety and maintenance ordinance. All those, first of all, any further discussion before the vote? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Nay?
Nay.
Nay. It passes 4-1. Thank you very much. The second thing on our appointment agenda is presentation by the chair of the ABC board, Michael Freeman. Mr. Freeman?
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
I was told to put on a pretty shirt. Come see y'all. The Berkeley County ABC board, which I'm the chair, and I brought my friends along. We have Mr. James Pugh, who's a board member.
Mm-hmm. See him come in.
Mr. Miles Davis, the other board member. Miles is also chair of the North Carolina Association of ABC Boards.
Yes.
We also have our general manager, Clint Freeman. But I'm probably the only one in here tonight that not going to bring y'all grief. I'm not asking for anything. As a matter of fact, I got you all smiling, so I'm going to give you something. And what I have a check for you for $12,002.50 from the profit from the ABC board.
Great.
I'd like to present you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Now I have a little surprise for you.
Uh-oh. Surprises.
I have another check.
Huh?
It's made out to the Berkeley County Commissioners, but it's earmarked for law enforcement. For $169. So, ladies and gentlemen, we, the Berkeley County ABC store, support a lot of causes. And one check that I didn't bring is for $269 made out to Berkeley County Board of Education, made for alcohol education. And we'll be presenting that to him at a later date.
Your meeting. Oh, great.
Hey.
Also, I didn't bring the check for the town of Windsor, which I will be presenting to them later on this week. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for your participation in helping us to accomplish this.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. We're always delighted when you bring money, I can tell you. So I keep coming back. One of the things I can truly say, first of all, we're honored to have a very good board who operates this one store that we have here, and to show you how connected they are to the rules and operations around it, that Mr. Miles Davis, local resident, who's always been, publicly involved as the president of the state association. And so that's great to have Miles here and Miles on our board. So thank you, Miles. Thank you. Okay, next on appointments, we have one of our friends back with us again today, Dr. Stan Riggs. Dr. Riggs, please come forward. Dr. Riggs is going to talk about an education center proposal that he has been working on for some time now, and I think you're going to like what you hear and what you see. Dr. Riggs?
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here. As you all probably remember...
Can you speak up?
I'm getting old. Speak up if I can.
Hey, why don't we turn it just sideways so that the public can hear this too? That's kind of important. Yes, if you just turn a little side. There you go. See, we can still hear you here, too. Yeah. That's perfect. There you go.
I'm sorry. I'll do the best I can. As you all know, Bertie County has 147 acres down on the west end of Albemarle Sound, commonly called the Tall Glass of Water. And Bertie County has initiated a plan to develop that county as a recreational center. Just south of that piece of property is another 1,300 acres that is now owned by the state of North Carolina, by the Division of State Parks, and it's called the Salmon Creek Natural Area. Because of where the money came from and the requirements of the state, this is declared as a natural area, which means that it is mostly just preserved land. However, there's one or two things you can do on preserved land. And what I want to remind the board is that in our report to the board from last year, you approved a skeleton program for a field education program. And one thing that the state allows on a natural area is education, and nothing else except some primitive activities. So if Bertie County wants to be a partner in this and be able to bring this into a program for this 1,500 acre region for the citizens of Bertie County, we have the option to bring it in there through education. So our proposal from NC Law is to put some beef on the skeleton of the report that you've already approved. And we call this a proposed field education program. What do we call it? Rivers to Sounds Field Education Center, a natural resource and cultural history-based experience for the students and teachers of Bertie County and their surrounding regions. Now, what NC Low would like to do is put some beef on that skeleton program that we submitted before and go to the state government and get a buy-in as part of the governor's education program. Now, the governor's education program has several things in it right now which are relevant to this property. One of them is a $3.9 billion bond issue that's going to go on in the election for this fall. $3.9 billion for education. And Bertie County will get a big hunk of that. But there's a lot of other money that's part of that program, the governor's program, and that part B of that is to safeguard North Carolina's natural resources by providing funding for local parks, land conservation, and restoration. And a third area is for improving access to North Carolina's natural resources through teacher training to increase outdoor science education, experience, and connections to North Carolina's natural and cultural history. And so, I would like to propose a partnership between Bertie County, the North Carolina Department of Natural and Cultural Resources, which includes the Division of State Parks and the Division of Archives and History. And this particular project, and I'll read the basic goal here. This proposal is outlined in the first NC Law report of 12/21/2018, provides a plan for Bertie County to participate in development of a world-class, field-oriented educational program to service the Bertie region in partnership with these Department of Natural and Cultural Resources on the 1,300-acre Salmon Creek Natural Area. The subjects that can go into this program are restricted to the natural and cultural resources, which means that this is what our history is all about. It's all about the resources of this county. It's about the cultural history of this county. It goes back thousands of years, the Native Americans, when the colonial arrival happened, with the African Americans, with the Latin Americans and Asian Americans that have recently been brought into the area. And this deals with historical features in the Roanoke-Albemarle region, including the colonial explorations, Native American reservations, plantations, colonial capitals, water, road, and rail navigation, and the regional industries of agriculture, silviculture, herring fisheries, hunting, fishing, which are all critical parts of this county and this region. So my purpose here today, in 15 minutes, I can't give all the details of the report, of the proposal, but we've got a very good team of people, I think, that may be able to make this happen. No guarantees. But in conclusion, I have a request for the Board of Commissioners for two items. First of all, I request permission for the NC Low to represent Bertie County in pursuing the possibility of a partnership with the state of North Carolina to develop the Rivers to Sounds Field Education Program on the Salmon Creek property. And number two, I request the Board of Commissioners to appoint Commissioner Ernestine Bazemore, a former school teacher, to represent the county in upcoming meetings of NC Low and NC officials. I have money to pay for Commissioner Bazemore's travel and participation in such. I think it's absolutely crucial. We can make a lot happen, but it really needs a Bertie County person in these meetings. That'll make all the difference in the world. So that's an important question. And with that, I wait for your approval because things are moving fast.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Riggs. Before you leave, I want the public to understand who Dr. Stan Riggs is. Dr. Stan Riggs is one of the leading experts on waterways and flooding and all kinds of things of that nature, not only in the state of North Carolina, but in this country. And he has been working with us as a part of not just development of this property, but also in terms of why are we flooding and what can we do about it? And Dr. Riggs, your expertise has been significant to both us and the town of Windsor in terms of our planning and what we can do to help mitigate some of these things. But this work that we're doing right here is so vitally important. I remember when I was last chairman of this board, I met at a fire station in Windsor with two or three people, and we were talking about the possibility of purchasing this waterfront property. Thank goodness the Board of Commissioners saw the value in doing that. And because of what we did, the Coastal Land Trust got involved and bought the 1,300 acres next door. So not only do we have the only public beach on the Albemarle Sound, but now we have a natural area, a state park preserve that can be used for citizens. The short of it is, we plan to develop our portion to include things like an amphitheater, camping, RV parking, an educational component, and much more. The key thing is, this can be a real destination, a reason to come to Bertie County. And this is going to belong to the citizens of Bertie County. And we need partnerships like this with NC Low to help us develop that educational component. It's vital to us. And also working with the Coastal Land Trust and the work that they're going to do around the, you know, the Lost Colony Found, Site X, and all those kinds of things. So I'm going to open up the floor for a motion to include both of these things, that NC Low to represent Bertie County in pursuing this, and also that Commissioner Ernestine Bazemore would be our representative as part of those meetings. So I'll open the floor for that.
I'd just like to ask, are you okay with that?
No, okay, good.
Well, I'll make a motion then. So moved.
Great.
I'll second.
Moved and properly seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Thank you, Dr. Rex. Thank you.
This is a really spectacular piece of property.
Truly.
And by putting this along with the other four or five water hubs that you got here and the Bertie Water Crescent, you've got something that is unique to the world.
World class. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Rex. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah. Thanks. Okay.
Next on our agenda would be Rachel Bellis and Daphne. Daphne, I hope I don't butcher your last name.
She's not here.
So I don't have to try to do it. And Heather Johnson. That's easier. I can do that. And they're going to talk about the standard of care for dogs in Bertie County.
I'm just
going to
hand these out.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Better be going to Devon and she get one of the dogs. There we go.
Oh, cool.
Whoa, whoa.
Oh my gosh, I can't see my nose. Can you turn on this a little bit. Good evening, Chairman Wesson and Honorable Commissioners. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here tonight. My name is Rachel Bellis. I'm the Manager of Local Affairs with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals for PETA. I'm here tonight with my colleague, Heather Johnson, who is our lead caseworker. And we're here tonight to talk to you about, share information about dogs in Bertie County. And hopefully, after seeing the presentation, you might consider strengthening your existing animal ordinance and consider passing a chaining ban, as Halifax County did recently. So just to tell you, and just as a side note, all of the photos in this presentation are from Bertie County. So just to tell you a little bit, PETA has a boots on the ground field work program that goes into low income areas in southeastern Virginia, northeastern North Carolina, and we assist folks with their animals by offering free to low cost spay neuter services, custom built wooden dog houses, straw bedding in the winter. We replace heavy chains with lightweight tie-outs. We give food, treats, toys, collars, pretty much anything you can think of. We also assist with vet care on a case-by-case basis. We are available 24/7, 365 days a year. Unfortunately, most of the animals that our field workers find are dogs who are chained outside 24/7. And just to let you know, PETA has spent almost $1.5 million on free services in Bertie County alone. So this is sometimes how we, well, most of the time, this is how we find a lot of the chain dogs in the county, not just in Bertie County, but in surrounding counties as well. These were two dogs that we found, and we did end up bringing them dog houses. People get very creative when they're looking for shelter for their animals, but as you can see, this is not adequate shelter for their dogs. We also find dogs like this. When a dog is chained, it's very easy for them to get tangled up. And if they do have shelter, food, or water, it makes no difference because they can't even get to it when they're tangled. And this is how we found this pup. A lot of the dogs we find are back in at the yard's edge or maybe back in the woods. Of course, they're walking around, they're getting tangled up, and they find themselves like this. And this is not even the worst that we have found. Outside in all conditions, while we're inside with our heat on or outside dry from the rain, we have dogs that are outside left in all in these kinds of conditions. Outside, this is a PETA dog house that we gave to this dog, and we also gave the straw bedding, but as you can see, he's on quite a heavy chain. PETA has a mobile spay-neuter clinic division, and we offer, like I said before, low to no cost spay-neuter services. We never turn anyone away based on their financial situation. We have spayed and neutered 780 animals from Bertie County residents, and most, if not all of those, are free of charge. Like I said, we never turn anyone away. We will transport animals. If somebody wants to get their animals spayed or neutered and they don't have transportation, we transport those animals to and from their homes, to our clinic, and back home again. These are just some of the local spay-neuter folks that we have helped with their animals. And this was Luna. Like I said before, we offer vet care on a case-by-case basis. Luna had an abscess on the side of her face. Her owner called us. He didn't have the $100 that the private vet clinic quoted him. He wanted to get Luna spayed anyway, so we picked her up. Our mobile clinic treated her abscess, and we spayed her all free of charge to the owner, and she's back home with her loving guardian. And now I'm going to pass the clicker on to my coworker Heather, and she's going to tell you some of the cases that she finds.
Thanks. So we're going to talk to you all about kind of what PETA does and how PETA can help. I'm a little more vain. I get to talk about some of the really cool animals I've gotten to meet and myself as well. I actually, before I was at PETA, I was an animal control officer for the city of Chesapeake. So I pursued a lot of cruelty cases. I had kind of the routine stuff. At PETA, I work as, I'm actually a lead case worker, but I work as a field worker and go through these cases quite often throughout the county. In Bertie County, we have over 150 active residences that we go to quite often. As Rachel said, we work kind of 24/7, 7 days a week. So if anyone ever needs us, they can give us a call and we will definitely try and help. The dog here, actually, his name is Coke. His mom's name is Snow. I'm sure a lot can be inferred from those references. This is actually an after picture after we've helped the situation. We provided the dog houses, but we also provided the food bowl, the toys, the food itself, the treats and everything. We've been visiting this residence since 2016. We started off with Mom, who you can see here, this is Snow. The residents here were actively breeding pit bulls. Quite a few of the residences we visit are. We still will provide shelter, though we always encourage spay and neuter. A lot of the ones I'm presenting today, I apologize, are very sad. At one point, we went earlier this year to go visit Snow, and we were informed that she had died. And when we asked about Coke and the puppies that had been there, you can see her puppies there in the picture. They were still there at that point, but Coke was doing very, very badly. He was emaciated. He was very anemic. He wasn't getting care. We came back a week later to check in, and actually when we found out that Snow had died, we contacted animal control because we were very concerned about how the puppies and how Coke was doing. We unfortunately did not hear back from them. We went out to check on them again, and they were all gone. And when we talked to the owner now, what had happened, they did not have an answer. This is Ghost. Ghost is a great dog. He is one of 8 chained dogs on the property. Ghost has mange. We offered free vet care to try and help with that because that vet bills unfortunately can pile up, especially when you have 8 chained dogs. We were denied and told that they can just use some motor oil, so they had no need of that service, although they do have tethers and PETA dog houses on the property. At the moment, all of the chain dogs are still there, and there are now, I believe, 6 puppies running at large that also have a similar skin condition. Animal control was also called on this residence and did not get any feedback. Pup, you can see Pup. Actually, again, that's going to be one of the temporary dog houses we had put out there. There were, I believe, 8 chihuahuas that are chained outside. I apologize, there are a few of them in a pen. We had talked when the hurricane happened a few years ago, this has been going on for years, about, you know, bringing them inside. We were told that they were property, and they absolutely were not allowed inside any of the chihuahuas. And when we contacted animal control did respond out. and they were told that they were not welcome on the property, and the situation has not changed. TD was a very sad case. TD was, I believe, one of five dogs that are chained on the property. TD here in these pictures you can see has an embedded collar. You get an embedded collar by simply not touching the animal. When a dog loses weight, owners will typically tie to the collar. But if you merely touch the animal, you can feel that the collar is too tight. So when the animal gains weight, it gets embedded in their neck. When we found TD with the embedded collar, we spoke to the owner. The owner's actually just ripped the collar off. So it was a large open wound, and it would have been very, very painful. When we contacted Animal Control to come out about the situation, they did respond out, but unfortunately their advice to the owner was to go to Tractor Supply and get some ointment for this, and that it did not require vet care, and that the owners did not need to seek any medical help for this dog. There are still five chained dogs on this property. This is Crystal. Crystal is one of two dogs on the property. We were able to provide, she's actually chained with a leash right now to a tree. We were able to provide dog houses, get a lightweight tie out, get a collar that fits her, and we can leash up on them. This is Beauty. Beauty, we met a long time ago when she was 6 years old, and they actually let us, you know, they let us spay her, and we got her a dog house and everything. But when we spayed her, we learned that she had heartworms, so we went back and did a lot of education work about how to fix heartworms and what she could do so she could still have a long life. They did not seek medical help. Beauty ended up being euthanized at the vet due to the heartworms, and they decided to go get another puppy to replace her and put her, put another dog back up on that chain. I believe there are seven dogs on that property that are chained up. Smoke is another one. Again, these are all kind of typical conditions. We didn't kind of bring any of the extreme ones. A lot of people don't like to see those photos. So these are kind of normal conditions that we see. Again, with a lot of the conditions with the mud and everything and the heavy chain. So we were able to move them and actually improve that situation quite a bit. Again, you can see the very algae-filled water. Jax is actually in a pen, but he kind of gets leftover food dumped in the back, so that's why you can see all the debris in the background. Ace, you can see again the lack of actual shelter and dark houses and the heavy chain. So a lot of what we do when we go out is try and provide education work in terms of trying to help everyone as much as we can, but also we're trying to educate them on proper ways to treat the animals. This was a sad case. These owners have multiple animals, including chickens, rabbits, one of the dogs, I believe, I've got to check, there are 11 dogs here. When we found this puppy who was dead at the time, we asked the owner about it, and the owner said, oh yeah, the whole litter died. I must have forgotten to throw that one out. We also talked to him because all of his dogs are very unsocial and very aggressive, so we largely can just kind of leave straw and make sure they have water. And he said, yes, I want them to be aggressive. I want them to protect the home, and he has them surrounding the house. So all of the dogs here are very aggressive and on heavy chains that if they broke could be very dangerous. This is Bucky. He's one of, I believe, six dogs that are here that has, again, just the chain directly around his neck and heavy chain. We have provided dog houses for them, but this one, he and another one are actually padlocked to these trees with the heavy chain. Moo is one of our sadder finds. The owner here actually wanted to neuter Moo, and we had come by to pick Moo up, and Moo was experienced end-stage heart failure. Moo was completely immobile. He couldn't breathe. It was very labored and very painful, and the field worker who went out was actually afraid he was going to die in front of her. We weren't able to reach the owner, so we did do the emergency situation, reach out to Animal Control and the deputy. We did not receive a response that day. So the field worker, because it was such an emergency and such a dire situation, actually stayed at that house with Moo for 4 hours until the owner came home. and recognize that this was an end-of-life situation and surrendered move for peaceful euthanasia. This is another instance. There were actually, I believe, 6 dogs on the property. There were 2 left. We came by just for a routine visit to give out, I believe, flea medication, which is a thing we do out in the summer. 4 of the dogs were gone. Isis and another dogs were the only dogs left, and they were emaciated, covered in fleas, completely anemic. The adult son who owned the dogs had been working uptown, and the mom who lived there said that the fleas had gotten so bad that they basically just took the other 4 dogs, and Isis and the other dog were the only ones left. And they were very kind and surrendered the 2 dogs to us so that we could get them some help.
What did you do with these folks that you go there and you see these dogs like the way they are? I mean, do you arrest them? Do you do anything?
Sorry, we're all playing that. No, we have no law enforcement capability. We're just citizens that we go in and try to help because I have the ability to offer transportation services. So mostly what we try to do is educate people and say, hey, this is what's going on with the dog, this is what needs to improve and everything by it. And then if that doesn't occur and we can't, after repeated visits, fix the situation, that would be when we would contact law enforcement if the situation only gets worse.
We never want to get anybody into trouble. We always try to do everything that we can, you know, because a lot of times people will understand after you talk to them, this isn't good for your dog. You know, dogs are pack animals. They want to be part of the family. They want to be inside with you. And so that's why we do the work that we do. And there are studies that show that dogs who are chained are almost 3 times as likely to attack as dogs who aren't chained. And if you can imagine a dog maybe has 10-foot, if that, and they're forced to eat, sleep, poop, pee, everything in this one patch of dirt, they become extremely possessive, protective over that patch of dirt, over their space. And also a lot of these dogs, they don't get any kind of socialization. So they become antisocial, and our children and our elderly, you know, they walk into this area and they could get attacked. And when they break off of their chains, which they do, they can also attack. They can get very aggressive. So we work with localities like Bertie County and others to improve the ordinances that you have. We've worked with Halifax County. We had been working with them for many years with the county manager, Tony Brown, Glenn Rollins, the health director, Bruce Robisteau. Chairman Vernon Bryant was a big supporter of this ordinance. He said on many occasions, we have to do better by our animals in the county. And so when they passed it and it went into effect on January 1st this year, it was an amazing, wonderful, and it's going to make a huge difference to dogs in Halifax County. So we make flyers, we put up billboards. We're not going anywhere. We want to help. We want to be a resource to you, and we just want to make the lives of these animals better. So we thank you for your time, and we're happy to answer any questions.
I have a question. If you're not law enforcement, what gives you the jurisdiction to go on the property and do the things that you're doing without permission?
We always ask permission. We never go on.
You said that y'all had been and taken photographs and checked on these dogs when the people weren't there. You said it multiple times. So I just want to know what gives you the jurisdiction. As a dog owner myself, I look at it in a way that I am responsible for my pets, and I do, but your interpretation of that may be different. And I'll tell you that there's a lot of reasons why we're concerned about your jurisdiction when you have zero.
We never go on a property without permission, and if we
but
if we do go on a property, if the owner is at home, it's because we have prior permission. We don't want to trespass.
So in order for me to hunt on a person's property, I must have written permission in the county. Do you have written permission to do so?
Let's hold that.
Well, we go and knock on the door and we talk to the people and ask, what can we do to help you? Do you need food? Do you need straw? We see that the shelter that your dog has is not sufficient. Can we bring a dog house out for you?
Okay. We can save the question until later. I think it's a good question to ask, and I think it's been answered. But let me say this to Rachel and to Heather. First of all, thank you. Thank you for the work you've done in Bertie County, because you have helped not only a lot of animals, but a lot of animal owners understand what it is and what they can do, and giving them help to take care of the animals. As you know, in Bertie County, we have an animal control officer. That officer is heavily worked because we get a lot of complaints, right? Whether it's PETA or whether it's a neighbor calling saying, check on this animal, we think it's a situation that law enforcement needs to take a look at. So there's a lot of work that a person can do. So I'm glad that this is a packed house. So people can see these pictures are of the county, right? Some of these pictures are shameful. So everybody needs to understand that we can't police everybody, right? One animal control officer can't make every call. But we should do the right things by our pets. It's our responsibility to take care of them. So we have put money into our budget for this fiscal year. A lot of that money is earmarked to our animal shelter. But we are willing to look at things that we can do to improve the situation. So we will take what you've given us, and you guys continue to work in here to advise us on how we can best spend our taxpayers' dollars to improve the situation here in Bertie County, because that's what we're hired to do. All right? So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, great. The last thing on our appointments and reports is a request for support of the Second Amendment by Lynn Hughes and Andrew Owensby. And I'm going to turn this over to Commissioner Lee, who requested this on the agenda and has also written a resolution that she may want to cover with us at some point. Okay. Commissioner Lee.
Thank you. While they're coming, if y'all will, I will read the resolution, not to take up their 15 minutes of presentation. So the resolution states, whereas the Constitution of the United States is the supreme law of our nation, and whereas the Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America states, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not infringe. And whereas a long line of established U.S. Supreme Court cases have ruled where rights are secured by the U.S. Constitution, including Second Amendment rights, no rule making or legislation may abrogate, is that the right word,
That's
abrogate,
it.
Those rights, and the right to keep and bear arms is secured by the due process and privileges and immunities. Causes of the 14th Amendment, which protects the rights of and closely related to the Second Amendment. And whereas the right to bear arms is necessary for self-defense, the defense of others, including family members, protection of individual liberty, and for the preservation of the United States Constitution. And whereas the Bertie County Board of Commissioners wishes to express its deep commitment to protecting Bertie County citizens' Second Amendment rights. And whereas the Bertie County Board of Commissioners wishes to express opposition to any law, regulation, or any other act that would infringe the Second Amendment rights of law-abiding Bertie County citizens. Whereas the Bertie County Board of Commissioners expresses intent for Bertie County to stand as a constitutionally rights-protected county for the Second Amendment rights by opposing any efforts by any entity to restrict these rights. Opposition will include any means available under the U.S. Constitution and the laws of North Carolina, including the withholding of funds, direction of county employees, legal action, and other means as deemed necessary and legal. Whereas the Bertie County Board of Commissioners implores the North Carolina legislators and the United States Congress to preserve, uphold, and protect the rights of all citizens to keep and bear arms under the United States Constitution, and further implores the North Carolina legislators and U.S. United States Congress to reject any provisions, law, or regulation that may infringe, had the tendency to infringe, or place any additional burdens on the right of law-abiding citizens to bear arms. Now, therefore, be it resolved, Burtee County government will not authorize or appropriate any government funds, resources, employees, agencies, contractors, buildings, or offices for the purpose of enforcing or assisting in gun confiscation or other restrictions that infringe on the right to keep and bear arms by law-abiding citizens as expressed in the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution. Such stated opposition not being consistent with current state and federal laws or state and federal constitutions. Be it further resolved, the Burtee County Board of, Burtee County government shall utilize all legal means necessary to protect the Second Amendment rights of the Burtee County citizens, including but not limited to legal action. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. My name is Lynn Hughes. I've been in Burtee County for 1 year. It's a great place. I love this place. So I'm going to open, and then I'm going to hand it over to Andrew. I just want to open by, I do take into account what the pastor, both pastors had to say about the Second Amendment, and I understand concern. However, it's sending a message to Raleigh that we're not going to let them start taking our rights away. It's just taking a stand to protect your constitutional rights and, you know, sending a message, we're not going to just do nothing when they start infringing on any of our rights, whether it be the right for freedom of speech or freedom of religion. They're trying that too. So this is just the start. I did want to point out, in response to the church congregation shootings, we had one in 2017, Sutherland Springs Church in Texas. Devin Patrick Kelly, age 21, of New Braunfels, Texas, fatally shot 26 people and wounded 20 others during a mass shooting at the First Baptist Church. He was prohibited by law from purchasing or possessing firearms and ammunition due to a domestic violence conviction in a court martial while in the United States Air Force. It did not stop him from going into a church congregation, killing and brutally killing 26 and wounding 20 others. There were 7 children and 2 unborn infants that died in that shooting unnecessarily. He was confronted then and traded fire with Stephen Wilford, a local resident and former NRA firearms instructor, who was armed legally with an AR-15 semi-automatic rifle. Now, law enforcement, I believe Andrew will go over this a little bit more, especially in a rural area such as this, the response times are not that great, folks. So if they take away our right to protect our family and our homes, your children, then what are you going to, are you going to wait? I know they protect us, and I have all faith in law enforcement, but there's only so many of them, and this is a very big county. So if they come in and take our guns, and the red flag law, he's going to talk about, I'm going to let him do that, but I just want you to know, recently we had the White Settlement, Texas church shooting. Now that one is a big one. Legal concealed carry permit holders stopped what would have been a horrible, horrible mass shooting. Unfortunately, 2 people died plus the shooter, but the shooter was stopped by legal gun-carrying citizens. So I'm going to hand it to Andrew.
Thank you.
I'm going to turn to voting because I'm here to speak to the 5 of you, and I think everybody in the room can hear me, and if not, I'll holler a little louder. My name's Andrew Olmby. I live at 107 K Park Church Road. I'm in Maryhill. I want to begin by thanking the chairman for putting on the agenda, and thank you, Tammy, for your work, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here and speak in front of you. I'll kind of go a little further into who I am and what I am. I am one of those people. I am a concealed carry permit holder. I own multiple AR-15 rifles. I've got a lot of ammunition. I got a lot of handguns of all different shapes, sizes, varieties, calibers. You've probably seen me in stores in town. You've probably seen me in church, and I probably open carry in a 1911, which, by the way, was military issue grade firearm in its day. Still is in some capacities. I may be concealed carry if you stand beside me in a store somewhere. If there's not a sign on the door, I've got a firearm. I have stood outside of my house, inside my house with the window open and watched Sheriff Holly pull a man out of the car in front of me with my AR-15 in my hand one night about 2 o'clock in the morning. He doesn't know that I was there standing. He doesn't need to know that I was there standing. I was in my house on my terms, protecting my property and my family. I watched him pull four individuals out of a car. And he was standing in my yard with his AR-15 service rifle. And I'm glad he had it. So I'm one of those people you spoke about, Reverend. But you don't know it. You won't know it. Because I'm a law-abiding citizen. And I'm here representing everybody in this room and the people that didn't come who are law-abiding citizens. And there was made mention of a 2013 resolution that was passed by the county commissioners. I believe you were on the board, right? I believe, Mr. Trent, you were on the board. Excuse me, Chair. And if I remember right from the notes I saw, you voted no. You voted in favor of it. We're not here to question why any of you voted the way you did. You chose to vote the way you did, and that's fine. And I hope that you voted because you were representing the people in your district the way you felt they wanted you to be representing them.
That's correct.
That was 7 years ago. That resolution addressed concealed carry permit holders like myself who do not want, I personally don't care, but some of us don't want that to be public information. The county took a stance against that being public information. What is the purpose of a concealed carry when everybody can look me up and know where I live and what I own and if I'm a concealed carry permit holder? That defeats the purpose of concealment. And that's the argument that was made, and that's why the resolution was passed. The resolution that we have helped draft and put together that is before you right now does not address concealed carry. It does not address me carrying in a church. It does not address my home defense. It doesn't address the type of rifle or the type of handgun I use for home defense. It doesn't address the caliber. It addresses none of the issues that were brought before you in an argument against it. The resolution that's here before you, the purpose of it is to align us with, as of this morning, the 50 other counties in the state of North Carolina that have passed similar resolutions, 50 out of 100. The estimate is 80 to 90% of the counties in this state will pass it. All but one county in the state of Virginia passed it. One. Even Portsmouth, Virginia, of all places, Portsmouth passed it. Gates County just passed it last week unanimously. I can go on down the list, and there's a lot on the docket. It'll be, if you follow it this week, there's a whole lot going to be coming. We took Surrey, Lincoln, and Bladen County and combined excerpts of their resolution to make this one. Those resolutions have been run through the ringers of their own attorneys. Their county attorneys gave their approval because it passed, some unanimously, some not. Bladen County has very similar demographics to what we have here. I own property in Bladen County. I did not go to the meeting, but I was in tune with what was going on. I've got a good friend that was there and told me about it. Our resolution is very similar to theirs. We fall within the 50 counties that have so far passed their resolution. We're not outliers. We're not on one end of the spectrum or the other. We want to be right in the middle, and we want to lock arms with those 50 counties. I had a discussion with a commissioner this morning, and he made a comment. He said, well, you know, these resolutions at the end of the day don't really have any teeth. They don't really mean anything. If you look at it from a legal standpoint, they mean nothing. In 1757, Benjamin Franklin printed a newspaper article. And in that newspaper article was a cartoon of a snake. It was cut into 10 sections, and it represents 13 colonies. I don't know why it was not broken into 13, but it was broken into 10. But it represented broken colonies, colonies that did not unite yet. They had not, they were all separate entities, they had their own currency, they were doing their own thing. They were up against tyranny and they were ready to fight it, but they couldn't do it alone. And he pushed the agenda to unite the 13 colonies as one. And the phrase unite or die became pretty popular. The First Navy Jack of the Marines was used as a flag. It has a snake, a rattlesnake, and it represents that cartoon. The reason why I decided to take this on and to be the voice of the people here is because I'm passionate about it and because I believe in it. I am passionate about my opportunity, my legal right to defend not only myself, my family, and the Constitution if need be. Bladen County, if you're not familiar with Bladen County, it's in southeast North Carolina on the Cape Fear River. Bladen County's capital is Elizabethtown. There was a Revolutionary War battle fought there, and the only thing left is a sign that talks about it, a historical marker put up by the state. It's called Tory Hole. Tories were everyday average citizens that fought and sided with, they were not enlisted soldiers, they fought on the side of the king. They sided with the crown. Whigs were everyday average citizens that did not fight under any flag officially. They sided on the Patriot side. So they fought. 67 Patriots ran over 200 Tories out of Elizabethtown and defeated them in a battle in the middle of the night. It's well documented. And in about 1840, somebody wrote a novel about it and went around and got some firsthand accounts of young children that were there. That's a prime example of why we need, still to this day, our opportunity to defend our Constitution. That right is given to us. It is not to be infringed upon. Now, I'm well aware of Scalia's opinion that every right is infringed upon in some way, some point, somehow. I got it. I cannot stand up here and scream fire and somebody's going to look at me and they're probably going to lock me up if I do it enough. I get it. We're not here to discuss that. This resolution doesn't go against any current law. It doesn't push back against any law that is on the dock or on the books right now. Our concern are the laws that are already in the works in the state of North Carolina's legislature that mimic Virginia's. Ralph Northam, who is the governor of Virginia, the proposed legislation that he put on the books was unbelievable. And it did include gun confiscation. It would have made nearly every gun owner in the state of Virginia overnight a felon if he did not turn in the weapons that he listed as what he deemed what you didn't need. I don't need this body, I don't need the state legislature, and I don't need the federal government to tell me what I need, even though they do already. I get it, and I understand the sentiments, because you're not educated on the topic. If you're not educated on the topic, you don't understand the difference between an M1 Grand and an AR-15. AR-15 was not a weapon of war, it was never put into service. M1 Grands were. You don't ever hear anybody talking about M1 Grands. You don't hear them talking about carbines, M1 carbines. Just as deadly, just as effective. This resolution applies to what we consider laws that are coming down the books that are detrimental to our individual rights adopted by the Second Amendment. The 14th Amendment allows that due process, which goes against red flag laws that infringe on and have been proven over time in multiple court cases that have infringed upon your 14th Amendment rights to due process. So red flag laws, no. I don't agree with them because I have the right to due process. I don't have the right for a sheriff to come into my house because somebody filed a complaint against me and hold my weapons until he deems it's time for me to get them back. So that's the problem with the red flag laws.
Andrew.
I'm getting there. So I recommend that this board does one of two things. You either side with your own opinions on firearms. You can take your own sentiments and apply it to what we have in front of you tonight. Or you can do what we think your job is and what we pay you a salary to do and stand behind your constituents and understand why we know what we're talking about, why we believe what we believe. The 2013 resolution does nothing to address this situation. It addressed a whole other topic, and it does not align us with the 50 counties that have already passed and the multiples are coming. We don't want to be an outlier. We want to stand with them. So you have a choice. You can either represent your own sentiment or you can represent the constituents that showed up here tonight in support of it. You got a choice and you got an election coming up too.
Andrew, we got it. Thank you, sir. So, don't make that kind of statement, but We always know that. We always know that.
Well, I know.
So that's not necessary to be
said. And the other thing I have the right to do is to say that. Sure. And I want them to know that there's right. election. Maybe they don't know.
And so that's why I'm cutting it off, sir. Thank you very much.
Well, my time's up.
Your time is up. Thank you.
But I did want to point out that in the 2013 resolution, one statement was made, and that was that the Bertie County Commission went on record supporting the citizens of Bertie County's rights to bear arms in the Second Amendment. So I just wanted to point that out. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
So I'd like to make a motion that we pass this resolution tonight. I've heard both sides. And I'm in full agreement with the majority of the folks in this room, and I'd like to see this resolution passed tonight.
So make the motion.
I make a motion that we pass the resolution.
Is there a second? Hearing no second, that amendment fails. Thank you. The only folks who can second that amendment. Listen, ladies and gentlemen. Let's be clear. This is a resolution for this five people. It takes a second from this body in order to vote on any resolution. We heard the sentiments. The resolution was read. The motion was made. There was no second. So it fails.
So it will stand that Bertie County will be one of, and maybe the only county in North Carolina.
Now, there are it'll stand that we took no vote on this resolution.
It'll also stand that you were not willing to make amendments to that resolution. You didn't even ask if we were willing to give on any topic of it.
Let me say this, Andrew. If it comes back before us with an amended, as you saw today, that we introduce an amended resolution. We voted on that amended resolution and we passed it. That is the procedure that we will use in any case, but we will not go beyond that for any special situation. Thank you. We have ruled here, it fails without a second. But let me say something, and I'll open it up to my other commissioners here on the board to say what they would like. I want to be very clear about my position, at least. First of all, I am a hunter. I am a gun owner, handgun owner, and proud of it. So I want you to understand who I am too, Andrew. I can go to any place right now in the state of North Carolina and buy a handgun from a legal dealer. Okay, I can do a background check. If I pass that background check, I can buy that weapon. And I have several that I have purchased, right? So the difference, however, in my opinion, is that I respect our existing Second Amendment right under the Constitution. It gives me that right to buy any. Please. I don't want to have to ask you to anymore. I'm speaking, please. I believe that Second Amendment right has protected me and all of you to do the same thing that I can do, which is to go in and buy any legal weapon that I choose to possess. But when I hear statements like, well, when they come, or if they take away, I personally do not feel like I'm under any cloud of anybody trying to take anything away from me. The Second Amendment to the Constitution has been here since the Constitution was formed. If I thought there was any significant effort to take away any rights for me to have own a weapon, I'd be for this, but I don't believe that is the case. I do believe, however, that any blanket amendment is not what we need. I want to make sure that people who are mentally ill or people who have committed child abuse or whatever cannot get weapons. They, even if they have been charged and they fail a background check, I believe in background checks, and I believe they should be stronger. I believe we need some, but nothing to prevent any law-abiding citizen for owning a weapon, and the law does not prevent it now. So that's my opinion, and I believe that is opinion that I think the majority of citizens share as well. So, okay, great. Now, let's move on. We also have the next thing. We move on to, excuse me, please, please. We move on to board appointments.
Wait a minute, wrong.
Yes, excuse me, any others?
Wait a minute.
Hold,
wait
please,
a minute,
please,
y'all.
please. Yes, I want to hear from others.
Well, yeah, you.
Yes,
let me hear. Y'all give me just a second.
Let's give.
The chairman said he's been allowed to hear from others, and I think people came here tonight. One of the reasons they came here tonight was to know where the commissioner stood on that, which is really the basis of a resolution anyway. Most of you in here know me, and I don't want to drag this thing out, but, you know, I started in the shooting sports at a very early age. I started my son in shooting sports at a very early age. He participated in high school shooting team, which I helped coach. My wife carries a gun for protection that I gave her and taught her how to use. I've been a certified law enforcement instructor for over 25 years, and I've been sworn to uphold and protect the Constitution for my entire adult life. I don't disagree with hardly anything that any of you have said tonight. I think you're on track. I think your intentions are good. I do have some questions about some of the wording in this resolution, and I'm not opposed to a resolution at all. I just have some questions about some of the wording of this concerns me, and I think we need to get some legal opinions on it, and I think it requires some discussion, and I'm just not ready to jump out and sign it tonight. I'm not opposed to a resolution, and I'm not disagreeing with everything you're saying. I just want everybody to know that. I'm not your, trust me, if you consider me an enemy because I didn't jump right over this and agree with everything you said tonight, you're going to have a hard time finding friends in government, because I'm not your enemy, okay? I'm your friend.
And I'd like to say also, I'm a law enforcement officer. I was from Florida. I was a state trooper. And when I was a state trooper, I was on Governor Graham's drug task force down there dealing with cartels. I was on the SRT team, FBI SWAT, school, trained as a sniper. I have many guns. I'm an avid hunter. I will tell you right now, as I voted before, on the 2013, I'm in favor of protection of our rights to bear arms in all ways that we can. There's wording in this resolution that I discussed with the county attorney today of how we would turn around and enforce this, how we would turn around and not break a promise or a commitment to the people that we signed this for. First off, I'm going to read the section real quick, okay? Because this is one of my deep concerns, since Andrew, you want to say something about that a little bit earlier. The Bertie County government will authorize and appropriate government funds, resources, employees, agencies, buildings, offices, purposes, enforcing, assisting in gun confiscation. In other words, we cannot do that if they pass laws. First off is, as I talked to Mr. Smith today, the county attorney, he says, John, we can't do that in the first place. So if we can't do it, why are we voting on something we can't do in the first place? Okay? That's first.
Which paragraph is that?
One before the last, right here.
And if you go back up to the, I guess it's probably the fourth down, whereas Bertie County Board of Commissioners expressed the intent for Bertie County to stand as a constitutional rights protection county for the Second Amendment rights by opposing any efforts by any entity to restrict these rights. Opposition will include any means available under U.S. Constitution laws of North Carolina, including withholding funds. Withholding funds. Direction of county employees. Legal actions and other means as deemed necessary as legal. Speaking to the attorney today, we couldn't do that if we wanted to. So how do we vote and sign on something that we can't do in the first place? And that's all I have to say about it.
I would just like to say that I do believe in the Second Amendment, but I'm trying to understand how do we get to the place where one thing requiring a comprehensive background check means taking away guns. In 2000, between 2000 and 2014, there were 126 mass shootings. And I'm sure everyone in here wants their family safe. And you have to be careful who the gun hand is in. I don't see nothing wrong with a background check. I don't see anything wrong with people with mental illness not having a gun. We are looking out for everyone, not just a certain group. I would make a very quick response to that. Our biggest concern is the red flag law.
Yep.
And I will tell you now that there have been two law-abiding citizens, men, not in North Carolina, have been killed in other states by their local police department for not surrendering their guns. Now, this red flag law is our biggest opposition because it means that if my neighbor doesn't like that I have guns, if my neighbor is totally anti-gun, and she calls and makes a complaint and says that I am a threat to her, to my children, to myself, the court can order the sheriff to come and take my guns pending further investigation. People have died, and there is a no-knock rule. They don't have to knock. They can bust your door down, come in your house, and demand you hand over your guns. Now, for law-abiding citizens with a gun, most of you people probably keep a shotgun by your back door. If somebody comes busting in your door, you shoot first, think later. You don't really, they're coming in to attack your family, your home. So there's a thin line here, and I understand everyone's concerns. It is not about the background checks. I'm all for that. But it is about the laws that they are trying. It is already being introduced into North Carolina legislature that they want to initiate red flag laws. They want to put that into law. They want to make it a class 6 felony to have a magazine that holds more than 10 bullets. My personal concealed carry weapon holds 13. It's a 9mm. That would make me a felon. That's what the concern is with us. It's not the background check. So maybe the language needs to be
changed. May I also make a statement?
Okay, so I would just like to tell the group that I have seen myself as kind of a liaison between this Board of Commissioners and this group that has joined us. And all along the way, I guess it was a self-appointed liaison, but yeah, all along the way, I have tried to keep both sides informed. This board has received several different resolutions of, and we have tweaked it. I've been in contact with the county attorneys. It was tweaked again. They have received every copy that we did, and I got no emails. I'm sorry, guys, but I got to throw you out there. I got no emails back from this board of commissioners saying, we don't like this paragraph, or we don't like this paragraph.
Tammy, so, you didn't get an email from me, but I spoke directly to you and told you my opposition.
No.
Yes, I did, on the phone just the other day. And no. I said that I was for this,
you
and I
not,
thought...
You did not say
not gonna go there.
A particular
not gonna go
paragraph.
There.
So, amen. Yes, please.
Also, and what I found out is there's two factors here that we have not came to the table on as far as our Second Amendment rights. And you're dealing with mental illness and you're dealing with intimidation. We learned a lesson from Charlottesville, Virginia. You got two amendment rights that are meant for, a right to peacefully protest and a right to bear arms. At the same time,
give me respect.
You have an intimidation process of the right to bear arms, and people are watching the news saying, why isn't law enforcement doing anything or stopping anything or saying anything? Because the enactment of this sanctuary allows...
We're not asking it to be a sanctuary. The word sanctuary is not in this resolution.
Let's be respectful of each other.
The wording, that's on is constitutional rights protection county.
Yes, sir.
And that's the same thing.
No, it is not.
Has the same
we are not asking this board to
we can all have different opinions. Voice your opinion. People can have different opinions. That's America.
Can I ask the board do one thing and all this? We talked about the legality of this. Can we consult these other counties? There's 50 that have signed off. So there's 50 attorneys that have signed their name with the same verbiage. Can we consult with those attorneys or not?
Andrew, you can consult with any attorney outside of here, but what you'll find, but what you will find, I think, and there are several different versions of this, not all the same, okay? Some don't speak of just blanket protection. Some speak specifically to certain protections, like I said, or that you should have the right to bear arms with exceptions of certain things. So there are many ways to write it. But our job is to read what's put before us and to make a determination, do we think that we personally agree with this and we think this is the best rule that is enforceable? Well, I can tell you this is not enforceable in any way, shape, or form. And if any other county passed something like this, they can't enforce this. That I can assure you.
We're trying to make a statement that these laws don't ever become law. That's the reason why we're locking arms with the other counties, to prevent this from even becoming law. We're not asking you to not enforce something that's not on the books. We're asking you to stand with these other 50 counties and let the legislature know that's how this board does.
Andrew, if the stance says that we will take certain actions that we know we cannot legally take, if we cannot sign anything that goes against our ability to enforce it, that wouldn't make any sense. That wouldn't make any sense. So, okay, we
can I make one comment?
Yes, sir.
This is the voice. This is our voice.
Yes.
That's why we're here tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you. All right, let's move on, please. We have some board appointments. The first one is for the Nursing Home Adult Care Advisory Board. We have one person, Ms. Caroline Young Askew, who is up for a, let's be a little quiet, please, as you leave, that's up for a 2-year term appointment. What is the pleasure of the board?
You might as well wait until they get out.
Okay. Tanner, do you remember when I called you the other day and I said I thought this was a mistake and I told you that I thought that this board was not ready?
You didn't tell me you didn't like this paragraph.
I didn't say I said that. I said that I told you that this was not going to pass because of the language in it.
No,
I said the board was against the language. I have nothing against Second Amendment rights.
You said this is not something the board knows, and I
thought the board would, because I've spoken to everyone, including Greg. It was the language in the bill. It was the language in the bill that we can't enforce. It makes no sense. Wow, excuse me, let's keep the noise out. We're not finished yet. If you're going to leave, please exit without noise so we can continue the meeting, please. Okay? We have a board appointment to the Nursing Home Adult Care Advisory Board. We have Ms. Caroline Young Askew, who's up for a 2-year term. What is your pleasure, board?
Second.
It's been properly moved and second that we appoint Ms. Caroline Young Askew for a 2-year term on the Nursing Home Adult Care Advisory Board. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Thank you, Ms. Askew is appointed, and clerk, will you notify her of the appointment? Thank you. On our consent agenda, I want to take, since we only have a few items, I want to take them one at a time. The first thing is the minutes for January the 6th, 20, the regular session, and the closed session minutes for 1/22 of 20. We've had those. That was our work session. What is your pleasure?
Make a motion. We approve.
I heard first Commissioner Lee, second by Commissioner Bazemore. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Ayes have it. The Register of Deeds report for January 20th, that's in your package. I think everybody had a chance to look at it. Again, your pleasure.
Move to approve.
Move to approve. And second, any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor of approving the Register of Deeds reports for January 2020, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nays? Ayes have it. It's approved. Now, we have several budget amendments here. A, B, and C. First is a crisis intervention fund received, the low-income home energy assistance fund received, and the juvenile crime prevention council funds received. Those three. Anyone desiring to take either one of them out or dealing, I'd like to deal with that as a package unless I have specific requests. Hearing none, floor is open for these three budget amendments.
Make a motion.
Commissioner Trent, Commissioner Bazemore, second. All those in favor, please say aye. All those not in favor, please say nay. Approved. Thank you. And also, we have a fourth thing, which is the tax release journal. You also had that in your package. If you have a chance to review that, unless you have either some concerns with it, you can deal with those individually, but I'm going to take it as one item. Again, open for your consideration.
Move to approve.
Commissioner Baseboard, second by Commissioner Lee. Any discussion on any of those items? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay.
That's easy.
Ayes have it. Thank you. Now, we have several things on our discussion agenda, so I want to make sure that we have time for these. First is the election updates from the Board of Elections, Ms. Sheila Holloman. Ms. Holloman, are you here?
Yes.
Please come forward. Thank you.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Just to give you an update on what's going on in the Board of Elections office, my staff and board members and I just recently returned back from the state board workshop. They conduct these workshops for the 100 counties before every election. And the basic discussions that we had this time were the law updates, attending workshops, and we participated in a mock election day. The main focus of the election day was the 10 points of election security, which I passed out to you. And just to hit on a few of the points our voting machines are not connected to the internet at all, so we have no threat of cyber intervention as far as our voting machines are conducted. We conduct logic and accuracy testing on all of the machines that will be used in the primary, and we have done that, and all of the machines have passed those tests. We also train all of our workers before every election. Our one-stop workers have been trained, and our election day workers will be trained on February the 25th. We have also reached out to the schools in Bertie County to get student assistance to help us out. They work well because we use computers now for our role, and the students are familiar with the computers. They are not afraid of the computers, so they usually work out well for us as assistants. You also have a copy of the early voting schedule. We have two locations for the primary. At the Board of Elections office, we'll be open from 8:30 to 5, our regular business hour. And then in Powellsville, we'll be open from 8 o'clock until 7:30 every day. So if anyone missed the voter registration deadline, which was on this past Friday, they can come to any of the one-stop locations and register and vote the same day. They will be asked to show some form of identification showing that they actually live at the address where they're putting on the application.
Ms. Sheila, can they also change their affiliation during that time? Just register?
Just okay. Register. The deadline to change your party affiliation was Friday.
Okay.
And I want to make sure, so they can still register and vote in the primary?
Yes. They have to register and vote the same day.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think there was some misinformation. I think some people were thinking that you could register, you could still vote in November, but you couldn't vote in the primary if you passed the original registration date. That's not true then?
No.
Okay.
That's the purpose of early voting. If you miss the registration date, mm-hmm. you have those 17 days where you can
still register and vote. Great.
In the primary, but you have to vote the same
that same day you register. Mm-hmm. Got it.
I have a question. Can I ask a question?
Sure, please.
Okay. On the registration form, it lists all the proposal president candidates. So if you're voting now, you say you can't vote in November.
No,
that's not what she's saying. No.
All right, I just want to make sure.
Yeah. Okay.
That I'm hearing.
Right.
What was your question about the
Well, because you say that it was brought to my attention, I got plenty of people ask me about the candidates that are running for president. So they have that on the ballot. And if they go in to register or whatever, and are they voting? I mean, how do they vote for it?
The purpose of the primary is to narrow the candidates that are running. So after the people vote in the primary, there will be one person elected to be put on the ballot in November for each party. So that's what the purpose of the primary is for.
So that they still will be able to vote in November.
Right. The person who, the candidate who wins in the primary's name will be transferred to the ballot in November. For that particular party.
Yeah, and that's the thing I think most people understand. There are different ballots based on being a Republican or being a Democrat, right? So if you're a Republican, you get a Republican ballot. You can narrow that your choice down if you're a Democrat. If you are an independent, non-affiliated, you can pick either those to vote.
Whichever party you
like, because those were the questions that was asked to me, and I was a little badly about it.
Okay, thank you.
And we happy to answer any questions. If someone has questions, they can just call us at the Board of Elections. We'll try to answer your question.
What is the number?
794-5306.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Every voter in North Carolina should have received this flyer from the State Board of Elections. Mm-hmm. It lets you know that you don't have to present photo ID for the primary. And it also gives you the dates that I just, it gives you the early voting dates. But Bertie County and every county has different hours. So if you want to know the dates for Bertie County, you can go on Bertie County's webpage on the elections page. Or you can stop by our office and we have flyers that you can do. And one more thing, there are two groups in Raleigh. It's voter participation groups. They have been sending out, you probably have gotten a letter from one of these groups. It's an application with your name already filled out with your information on there. And one of the letters says that you are registered, you are a Bertie County resident, but you are not a registered voter. And a lot of people who have called are registered voters, but we just want to let you know that those letters did not come from the State Board of Elections. It's a voter participation group. But anybody who calls, who has gotten one of these letters, if you call us, we can verify that you are a registered voter. And I think that's all right.
Yes, very quick. For the primaries, if you're a first-time voter, would you need ID?
You would need photo ID. You need some type of ID. Well, if you registered when you filled out your voter registration, if you did not provide a social security number or a driver's license where we could track and verify that you live at that address, you will have to show ID, but it doesn't have to be a photo ID. It's a Harvard ID that shows you actually live at that address.
Any other questions from the board? Ms. Hummer, I had one question that came up in church Sunday that one of the petitioners said when they had sent, we had a few sample ballots that we were looking at, right? And the person said, could we make sure that when people come to get a ballot that they know to turn it over and look at the other side? Because some ballots are just a couple of things on the back of the ballot. So when a person from the office gives out a ballot to a person, is anyone going to say, don't forget that there are items on the other side?
Yes, and it's written on the back, on the bottom of the ballot.
You're right. But people sometimes don't read, right?
We have two ballots that are on both sides. The other ballots are not. The Democratic ballot is on both sides because we have so many presidential candidates.
That's right, right.
So, yes, and then when you come to vote, we will have a note on the ballot station to remind voters who get those ballots that they need to vote on both sides.
Perfect. Thank you. All right. Thank you very much. Okay, second on the discussion agenda is Steve Biggs, Director of Economic Development for the county. Steve?
Thank you much. Appreciate y'all allowing me to be in here tonight. And I will make this quick, fast, in a hurry, painless, whatever I can do. Mayor, thank you for having me tonight. Appreciate it so much.
It's our pleasure. It's been a learning experience for most of us.
Well, to you, last time I was standing in this position, of course, we were down the street a little ways. You and I walked outside afterwards, and you said, you see that piece of property over there? That would make a great place for us to put a Dollar General.
Yes.
Unfortunately, it didn't go there, but it went a little further.
We got a lot of help to make that happen.
Yeah, we did.
No, thank you. Thank you. You sure got it now. Excuse me. The county manager asked me to come before you tonight just to, number one, give you an update. I know you get a lot of questions about what is happening with our $250,000 grant that Roanoke Electric was receiving for broadband. And the short answer is the money is still there. It was appropriated. The way that this particular grant was set up exactly for Roanoke Electric to get it. But the problem that we have run into over the last 3 years is CDBG is not the easiest group in the world to work with, number one. Number two, Roanoke Electric, and I use this scenario with the manager today, Roanoke Electric uses a specific pole. And if they use this pole, they have to get three bids to use this pole. Well, no one else makes this pole. So they can't get three bids, and we've been fighting back and forth with CDBG to get an easement from that so that they can continue to use the poles they've been using forever. But I did want to just read this real quick to you. Kevin Richards, who is with the Mideast Commission, and he handles grant writing and economic development for them, sent me, he said, just an update on the status of the broadband grant. McDavid Associates, hired by Roanoke Electric, is in the process of finishing a request to Commerce that will allow for sole sourcing the equipment for the grant, the pole, the sole sourcing. Roanoke Electric has one brand that they use, and the new equipment needs to be that same brand. We are making this request to Commerce to get their blessings, so there will be no chance of any payback for ineligible expenses. The grant is for the equipment and three poles. Three poles holding up $250,000. We'll probably bid the project as two separate contracts once we have Commerce's blessing on the sole source. And Kevin was up last week to talk to CDBG about this, and they feel like they have worked it out now. So hang on. Hopefully we're going to get better broadband service in Allander, which is the test ground for this. I know y'all hear about tall glass of water all the time. As you know, we have spent a lot of time working on that. We do feel like it will be an economic driver, as was mentioned tonight. Robin is here with me tonight. God bless her. I don't know what I'd do without her. I don't mind telling you. I am so glad that she agreed to come on board and be a consultant with us, because she knows the players and she knows the programs. And she knows the people. So hopefully we will see this progress. Tomorrow we have a meeting with our group for the beach day that we hope will be as a big event as it was last year. And I think you actually have it on your agenda tonight to confirm the date of June 6th, the time 9 to 4. One of the other big issues that has come up is the trading post with our friends, the Tuscarora Indians. They are trying to get confirmation from either or the DA's office or the Attorney General's office. Commissioner Atkins and I met with affiliate of theirs last week, and I think we kind of led them that way that, you know, this is not something that the county can handle what they're asking for. We contacted Representative Goodwin's office to find out if they knew somebody, Richard, that works for this representative's legislative assistant, to see if they knew someone over in the Attorney General's office that we could get a quick answer from. The Tuscaroans have hired McGuire Woods, which, as most of you know, is very well known in the Raleigh area and very, very professional group is going to help them out with the Attorney General's office. They are also meeting with the attorneys at McGuire Woods, and the Tuscaroans are meeting with Representative Gilman on the 20th, so that we hope we can knock this thing out of the park and be done with it. Real quick, Trader Furniture, I know y'all have probably seen, has opened up now in Windsor Square, glad to have them. Perry Diesel Company, that used to be a company here in Bertie County that moved to Elizabeth City. We're trying our best to woo them back. They want to come back. And we're doing our best to get them back. We're having a tough time on them. I intend to find what they need, but we're going to find something for them. Somewhere, somehow, we're going to find something that'll work for them. A new company that we're working with called Down Home Sheds. I talked with Donnie today, and they hope to close on the piece of property they're looking at. I had on Highway 1317 south of Windsor. They hope to close on that by the end of this month and hoping to be in business by the end of March. Of course, you don't get to hear Commissioner Lee talk much about the Tri-County Airport Terminal. I know you don't. But that is something we are certainly all proud of. We got a memo this afternoon that the building is down, thank God.
I have pictures. Yes, the building is down.
I've said this 100 times, and I said it the other day when we had the groundbreaking. If I was a Fortune 500 company that was flying into here and had to walk in that business, I'd get back on my plane and find somewhere else to go. So that's going to be something we're certainly going to be proud of. And something that's going to be coming back to you real soon is Gen X, the Gen X Solar. They've been before you before, and now they've done what you have asked as far as having a public meeting. Just to refresh your memory, it's a 1,200-acre solar farm, and they will be back very, very soon to speak with you. Something that I dropped. If you want a little bit of excitement in your life, in your downtown Windsor, I know we're in Powell, I know we're here, but if you are downtown Windsor, stop by the new barbershop, Earnhardt and Jerk. That young man that is running that barbershop, he's got two pictures in there. He's got a picture of his daddy, who cut his hair the first time, and he's got a picture of the barber that cut his hair professionally the first time. And he gets excited about telling you about those people. So if you want a little bit of excitement, stop by and see if they're the newest business that's right now. Like I said, I'm going to make it quick, fast, and in a hurry, but I did want to give you that brief update. And if you've got any questions for me, I'll be more than glad to try to answer.
Okay.
I have not a question, but I have a comment. My name is Hadass Steele, and I am a town commissioner here in Powellsville. And Steve, you remember me, I served on your board many
yes,
years
ma'am.
Ago.
I certainly do.
And I certainly intend to get back on that board. And I just want to say to the commissioners and to you, like an old gospel song that we have, when you start handing out blessings, please don't forget power.
Thank you, Steve. Next up is going to be Ms. Annie Wilson, our registered deeds. She's going to speak to her about an issue. I want to say, when Ms. Wilson comes, she's not only our registered deeds, she is president of the State Association of Registers of Deeds. You're welcome. Please, your turn.
First, I'd like to say good afternoon to everyone.
Good afternoon.
To the chair, vice chair, to the board, county manager, and the clerk to the board, to our attorney, and to our junior commissioner, who
I know it's late, it's past your bedtime. I won't be before you long because, for one, I've been traveling all day. Number two, my feet hurt from standing so long. So I won't be before you long. But I do want to give an update to you from the Register of Deeds office since I've taken office in 2012. We have implemented some of the new technology things, and one of my my platform was to keep the registries up to with the technology of the 21st century. I have been trying to do that, and if you look at some of the things that we have done so far, I just want to go over with some of the citizens that may not know. And the first thing that I want to talk about is when I came into office, it was a lot of electronic technology things that was going on, and in the surrounding counties, the larger counties. And I'm proud to say that we have had a chance to bring those things to Berkeley County. Some of you have heard about it and put it in the paper. But one of the first things that we did was the electronic birth registration. What the electronic birth registration is for, since we don't have a birthing center in Berkeley County since 1987, citizens that are born from 1971 up until the present time can come into our office and request their birth certificate even if they were not born, because they were not born in Berkeley County. So what that means is if a citizen was, if you were born or your children was born in Pitt County or Fayetteville from 1971 up until now, you can come into the Berkeley County Register of Deeds office and purchase that birth certificate. It's still a $10 fee for the birth certificate, but it's $14 to the state because we're on a statewide system. And I do have a little bit of for you all so that you can see, since we've been doing that, how it has brought revenue into the county. Okay? The next thing we had is the online birth registration. And what that does is any citizen that was born in Berkeley County, if they now live in another state or anywhere else, they can request that birth certificate online. They can log on to our online system. They can put in that information, upload their credit card information, and it comes directly into our office. Once it's there, we can look at it. If everything is okay, we can process that birth certificate on the same day. And what we've seen a lot of citizens, people that have called into our office, and they was like, I need my birth certificate by this weekend because I have to go to Social Security, I need to go to disability. And first, we had to wait for it to come through the mail. It gets us in the mail, and something was wrong with it, we would have to mail it back to them, and then wait for them to correct it, and then they would mail it back to us, which could be 3 weeks or so, depending on the mail. Well, now, the only thing they have to do, like I said, is go on our website. They can send that information right to us. Their payment of $10 plus a $3.95 fee, so $13.95. We can look at it, we can process that birth certificate on that same day and put it in the mail before 4 o'clock that day. So that's another thing. The next thing that we have done is the electronic recording. What the electronic recording does is now a lot of our larger banks, same thing, it speeds up that snail mail. So we don't have to worry about them sending a document to us, and then it will, you know, it gets to us, they didn't send something with it, we had to mail it back to them, then, you know, and attorney, you know about that. And we would go back and forth, oh, the seal wasn't dark and then this and that. Now, if they send it to us electronically, we can look at it right now. If there's anything wrong with it, we can send them an email. They can correct it. They can send it back. Your documents, your deeds of trust, whatever you do, it can be recorded on that same day. Another thing that we have implemented was the credit card payment. Well, you know, the new generation, we don't write checks. So we come in, and a lot of people was coming in, especially out of town, and they wanted, y'all don't take credit card payments, y'all don't take credit card payments. So last year, we did start taking credit card payments, and that has been a success also. So people are very proud of that, because they can just come in, whatever it is, they swipe the card, it's done, it's a done deal. Also, we don't have to worry about any checks, bouncing, trying to find them back. Okay?
Another thing that we've done is, with the help of you all, first of all, again, I want to thank you all for what you've done thus far as the budget and letting me be able to keep things running into the registry's office. Now, all of these services that I've mentioned so far has not been any cost to the county. Okay. The next thing that you did do, though, was I know Commissioner Trent would come over and he looked at some books and a few of the other, but you know our books was in very bad shape. So we started having those preserved by having them put into plastic sleeves. And you know our birth books start in 1913. So those records are very old and they're very brittle. And you could pick them up and your fingernail could break them, you know, go through them. So we have this, it's acid-free, and they put them in sleeves and new books. I didn't get a chance to bring one with me today because I didn't get a chance to stop that by. But we were able to do all our birth books from 1915 up until 1987 when we stopped having birth. So all our birth books are done. And I want to say thank you for that. And what and even when I asked for an increase in the line item, it took, I think we would do about 10 books a year that ran us about $20,000. So we were able to get all of those done. And I'd like to say thank you for that. And with doing that, we were running out of room. So we were able to also get the rolling bookshelves. So that freed up some space on the wall. So now we have the three bookshelves in the back, which the birth section is filled. But you know our marriages and death are still coming in. So when you get a chance, I would love for you to come by and take a look at that. Okay. Now, going over those fees that we were talking about, if you look at, I think I gave you the right one. But our electronic birth started in April 2015. Okay, and if you look at the item where it says vital statistics, and you'll see the first one I think that you have is 2015-2016, we collected $14,119. Okay, if you go down to the next highlighted area where you see the state vital records, we did 30 at $14, which gave us $420. That was the difference of what we collected that year. If you go, and you'll see every year from 2016-2017, that went up from $420 the next year, we did $672. And then in 2017-2018, we did a total of 63, which went to $882 that we brought into the county. And from 2018-2019, it was $1,055. So you can see that the more people that know about this system, the more revenue is bringing into the county. Okay? So that's one out. The next one, and I'm talking kind of fast because, like I said, I know it's kind of late. Also, the next thing that you'll be getting will be about the online vitals, which is the one where, you know, the people have called in and requested them online. You can see there in July of 2015 to June 2016, we did a total of 66, which was $794 into the county extra, because we were not doing this online system. So that means that we collected an extra $794 there. 2016-2017, it was $811.50. 2017-2018, $603. And 2018-2019 was $883. So, like I said, you can see how, you know, it is, everything that we're doing, it is bringing revenue into the county. Okay? So that brings me to, and our e-recording, also, if you look at that sheet that I gave you on our e-recording, our recording status, you can see each year how the real estate registration, which is on the top, how it has increased also. So that brings me to today of a new project that I'm trying to bring forth into the county, which is being a passport agent.
That would be wonderful.
Because we have a lot of citizens that call and ask, do passports, is it anywhere close? They are doing them in, I think Jackson said,
the clerk of court over there does. I did a little research on them, Jackson, Edgecombe, and then today I went further east, so Pequimus and Cameron County. So for Berkshire County, that means we have to either go to Pitt County, to Tarboro, which is Edgecombe County, or to Pequimus, Hertford County, or Elizabeth City to get our passport done. Now, I did speak to some other clerk of court and some other registrees that are doing passports. In order for us to do passports, now you know that I only have a staff of three, so that means that whoever I choose to do passports will not be able to issue vitals in them. So they can't, you know, cross and do that, okay? So they would take one person off of doing vitals, but they can do everything else, okay? So, and they will be trained to do all that. I talked with the clerk in Pitt County, and she said in a day's time, they issue about 25. So half of those that she do in a day's time, half of them are out of county. So that means that other half, some of them are coming from Bertie, Martin. So we can bring people in from Martin, Kirkwood, Gates, and the surrounding counties that will come right to Berkshire County, like they do for the electronic birth registration. Now, I went to Camden County today, talked with the clerk of court there, and they take them by appointments, but on an average of a day, they may issue, this is a very small county, they have about 10 to 12,000 people. She said they can issue about three, but they get their people from Currituck, and because Pastor Tank is right here next door, less than 10 minutes, most of the people go there. Now, with that being said, what would it bring to the county? For every passport that's issued, there's $110 processing fee that's for the passport fee. But the county, for us processing, if we take the picture, if we take the ID for other people, we can charge $10 to $15 and a $35 processing fee to the county. So that would be a total of $45. Plus the 110. So even if we didn't do the ID, that's $35 processing fee that has to be paid anyway for doing the application. Okay? So if we did only three a day, that's $95 that day. Okay? And then if we did that times a year, so that would generate, you know, funds to come into the county also. One other thing I wanted to mention about the passport. And also with me doing the passport, I have to have room. So, and because our office, you know, is already built to capacity, and we have to have a different station set up for the passports. I've looked around and tried to find an area. We know in the back we have our attorneys come in, our paralegals come in, and they be doing surgeries. So, we were looking at, I had talked with Mr. Bowen a little bit, and we was thinking of if we could get another space. I know that the corporate extension will be moving out. I don't know the shape of that building at all. I haven't been in there in years. So where the corporate extension is, that could be an area, because we are running out of space. I don't know if it's larger than what we have. I have to look into it. Okay? We will have to look into it. And then the next thing that I thought of was the bank across the street, which you go to other counties, register these offices are not, a lot of them are not in there. If you go to Pastor Tank, Elizabeth said that we're there today. Theirs is across the street from the courthouse, okay? So that is an option also that I hope that you, you know, if we can implement this. And the only price that this will cost us is if we do the photos to get the machine out and the camera set up, which one of the registrars said it ranged her about $600, depending on who you get it from, okay? That person will be trained, they will be certified, okay? So, and depending on how the flow goes, if, you know, if we had to maybe hire a part-time person to work, but it will generate revenue into the county. So that's what I have for you. And I hope that what we've done thus far has been very helpful to our citizens, because
as the registered and elected official. That's what we do. I'm the custodian of your record, and also I'm there to serve our people and whatever service that can make it easy for our citizens. That's what I try to do. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Let's thank put you. It on a work session agenda and talk about it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Okay. Next, County Manager, we have a petition for a DOT road addition. So
yes, this is pretty much just a follow-up. At our last meeting, we had a junior commissioner to inquire about the status of a couple of petitions for DOT road additions. Within the past couple of months, we had two petitions, one for Chowan Shores and one for Pintail Drive, which you heard a little bit about during public comments. And Chairman, you summed it up well. Of course, there was some petitions reported on to DOT, and they responded to us as well as to the property owners who submitted the petition with a number of items that the property owners are required to do in order for them to you know, add them as secondary roads for DOT. And so on one of the responses, there were like 19 items, and on the other, there were 16. So it's really on the property owners, you know, to come together. I encourage them to come together to do what it takes to meet those requirements and to contact DOT if you have any issues to need to be worked through.
Great. Next is the Bertie Martin Regional Jail Feasibility Study.
Yes. A little while ago, you as a board approved an interlocal agreement with Martin County and Chowan County. The interlocal agreement stated that you would move forward with a feasibility study, but it said you would need to come back before you once you figured out the cost and all of that. And so we determined exactly what the cost is. And another concern for the board was to also make sure that manager Kevin Howard and Chowan County were on board with exactly where we stood with our participation. And I provided a letter for you from Manager Howard, which pretty much states that the feasibility study is simply for the counties to assess whether or not it's feasible for the three counties to come together for this partnership to share our jail. So at this time, if you, upon your approval, if you would approve for us to move forward with that feasibility study, Chowan and Martin counties are ready to move forward.
Great.
Make a motion, we move forward.
Great. Do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion, further discussion concerning that? Hearing none. All those in favor of moving forth, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Thank you. Thank you for clearing up that one issue that we had. So now we're in firm ground. Next is Bertie Beach 20,000 confirmation of our planned open day, June the 6th of 2020. I understand, Mr. County Manager, that we have a committee that we're putting together to look at this. We're thinking 9 o'clock to 4 o'clock on open day. Last year, members of the public, we had 900 plus people show up on opening day at Bertie Beach. And we're hoping to beat that this year and have even more people out. This property, if you haven't been out there to see it, I think it's the most beautiful piece of the Albemarle Sound. And you own that piece of property. And we're going to work over the years to develop that piece of property so it can be used for multiple purposes, educational purposes. We want to have an amphitheater. We want to have RV parking. It's right next door to the park. And so we have a tremendous opportunity. So what is your pleasure, Mr. Manager, about confirming that date?
I propose the date of June 6, 2020, if that works for everyone. If so, we'll, under consensus, we'll move forward with planning for June 6, 2020.
Do we have consensus around that date?
Yes.
Yes, we do.
And the committee is going to come back to us with a budget?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Great. So we pass that by consensus. Thank you. Okay. Next is commissioner's report. Let me start from this end. Commissioner Baseball?
I just want to remind citizens of the quarter cents, the 1/4 of a penny quarter cent sales tax. If approved by the voters, the initiative would generate $170,000 in new revenue for Bertie County Schools. So please pay attention to the ballot. Also, more importantly, is the census. which is April 1. Now, elections is important. It affects us for 4 years. Census affects us for 10 years. It is very, very important that everyone is counted. And I was hoping that perhaps the county look at monies to help with the census. That's just how important it is. Because it's critical for services like healthcare, hospital, education, and it also guides in redistricting and economic development. So everyone, every child must be counted. And we, the people, need to make sure we get the money Bertie County deserves, because often we are not counted. Okay. So we are the moral compass for these turbulent times. So let us do our fair share in doing the census and elections. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Commissioner Trent.
Yeah. Army Corps of Engineers sent out two emails, one yesterday and today, as far as Roanoke River. People are figuring on going down there to the piers or to the boat ramps. They're going to be flooded with water. They started out with 25,000 CFS, which is cubic feet per second, being relief, hoping that was going to relieve the water coming into the dam area at Lake Kerr. And what has happened is that they're receiving over 100,000 cubic feet per second coming into the dam area. This is going to cause massive flooding. And they started out with 25. They're going to be moving to 35,000 cubic feet per second this coming week to relieve that pressure on the dam. You're talking about Weeping Mary Road, the other roads that are side roads down there, all the way through there. Last year we had 9 floods out of 12 months that washed out farmland, crops, the whole 9 yards.
Yep.
And so we're in the situation again right now.
Thank you. Thank you. Commissioner Atkins.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Commissioner Lee.
Yes, Mr. Biggs kind of stole some of my thunder, but in case you didn't hear him, and it's okay because he serves on the airport authority with me, but in case you didn't hear, we're getting a new airport terminal at 0% local match. I cannot tell you how big of a deal this is. But the building, the old terminal is down, and they will begin building the new terminal on that site shortly, yes. So we have a pre-construction meeting tomorrow, and so excited. The building, if you hadn't ever been in there, it was in bad, bad, bad shape. So the airport authority has worked really hard to make this happen at a 0% local match. Also, I had the opportunity to go to Advanced Leadership Corps class at UNC Chapel Hill this past week. And this class is sponsored by Prudential Insurance and North Carolina Association of County Commissioners. It was a long, hard week, but very worthwhile. So Commissioner Chairman Wesson and Commissioner Bazemore both have attended this class, and so I would love to see the other two commissioners up here, if they can carve some time out of their busy schedules to go real soon, because it's a great class. So thank you for letting me get away from the county for a week to attend.
Great. I want to hear next from our junior commissioners.
I don't have anything.
Okay, great.
All righty. I'm going to speak quickly. Everybody hear a pin drop? Well, I'm going to run out that door. Hop in that car and go home. Sorry, when I'm hungry, I'm going to have a perfect sandwich. Anyway, so I believe last month on the, I believe it's January the 12th, I attended a Tall Glass of Water meeting. Sadly, I was the only junior commissioner there. The other two, they have academic obligations, to say the least. So they weren't able to make it. But from what I have heard and from what I was there to witness, that project itself sounds like a really sound project. It's really and truly the future of VERTE, where we should be heading and where we are heading. And so to me, it's a very, very good venture forward, and I look forward to the meeting on this upcoming Wednesday. I believe, correct?
That's correct.
That's great. All right. Now, the next piece of baggage I want to tackle here is this Second Amendment, which I really and truly, I honestly, I'm going to tell you, I thought it could not get any worse than the road ordinance, but hey, when life gives you lemons, I tell you, it knows how to make lemonade.
That's right.
So, I have heard from, I almost said the congregation, I've heard from the citizens, I've heard from the board, and I've read it myself. And from what I have read and from what I know about the Constitution, thanks to the federal mandated civics and economics course, this right here that I'm looking at is an abomination. This is not what we need. We, the people, by the people of the United States of America, need a compromise. Now, how we get to that compromise, well, you can go and ask Google that piece. But we need a compromise. Now, I'm all for rights to bear arms, as I don't know if anybody has ever seen it, but if you are a fan of the old Cold War movies like I am, I'm pretty sure most people have taken part since Red Dawn. In Red Dawn, there was an invasion by a communist nation in Seattle. And if it had not been for the responsible gun owners of Seattle, well, Seattle, number one, would have been lost. And number two, finally, since 1812, a foreign invader would have stepped foot on U.S. soil unopposed. Take that into consideration. At the turn of the 20th century, for those who do not know, we are living in the 21st century. There's a difference. Don't ask me why. Don't ask me how. You have to take that up with these things. Anyway, we have seen a drastic increase of violence. Now, violence begets violence. Revenge begets revenge. Or so the story goes. We have people with mental illnesses. We have people with suicidal thoughts. We have people who only want to inflict hurt on other people. We have seen this throughout time and history itself. So I ask the citizens of this county and the nation as well, when will we take a stand and dictate terms that are agreeable to all? Because I have sat here impartial and as quiet as a mouse, and I've heard from both sides. I've heard people say that they don't want their guns taken. I've heard people talk about these red flag laws. I've heard people say that this right here that I am currently looking at is not the answer. But I tell you what is the answer. We the people, by the people. I have nothing further to say. Have a good night.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to be quick with just a couple of things. First of all, the state has just released the rankings of counties here in the state. And I'm very pleased to report that VERTE County has increased every year in the last 5 years in our county rankings. And I don't know of another county in the state that has done that for 5 straight years. Also, our unemployment rate now in VERTE County is below 5%. And we are lower than most of the other counties around us. Another great thing. A lot of jobs. Yeah, we need more, and we need maybe more of the right kinds of jobs. But our unemployment rate in VERTE County is very low. On our work session, I attended a session of the North Carolina Association of County Commissioners, and I sit on the General Government committee. And we've looked at all of the dollars that are still available to counties from Matthew all the way up through Florence. And there are still about 400 and some million dollars available. Now, a lot of that money for Florence is still earmarked to the counties that were severely affected. We're not one of those for Florence. We are still on Matthew, but 20% of that money is still available to other counties. So when we have our work session, I'll give copies out and we can review that, but there's still an awful lot of money. Has not been spent, has not been earmarked. Anybody, just sitting there waiting for application, believe it or not. And we need to make sure we're looking at that. Commissioner Bazemore talked about quarter cent sales tax. Only thing I want to say about that is when you go to other counties, you are paying that quarter cent sales tax. But when other county people come to Bertie County, they are not paying it. And we need to be capturing that one quarter cent sales tax as a way of increasing our ability to attract and retain teachers and other school employees. On the census, this will blow your mind. Every missed person that we don't count, the county loses approximately $1,600 for each person that we miss. So we need to take this seriously. Imagine if we missed a group home that had 10 people there and we didn't count them. Right? And so that $1,600 turns into $16,000. And I can tell you, communities like Powellsville, like Orlando and others, have not gotten their fair share of program dollars because we've missed the census count. We spent a great deal of money making sure that we geocoded every single address in this county. That means that you will get something at your address for you to fill out. That's the first thing. If you fill it out and send it back, nobody's going to bother you. If you're proactive, want to go online and fill it out, nobody's going to bother you. But if you don't do either of those things, somebody's going to come knock on your door and says, who lives here? Can we count you? And they're going to try to tell you why. If anybody is looking for employment, go down into Windsor at JobLink. They are hiring, registering people right now, $15 an hour. To come out and be a census taker. And they are trying to assign these people in their own communities where when they go and knock on people's doors, people know them because they live in that community. That's important to us. We've never truly had that here before. We've had people from outside come in and people don't know them. They don't open their doors to them. So we think this is important. And $15 an hour, nothing to sneeze at, right? That's it for me. I'll now go to the county manager. County manager's report.
Yes, just a couple things. I echo the sentiments of our commissioners when it comes to quarter cent sales tax and when it comes to census 2020. But for the sake of time, I won't go into that. But I will say, please don't leave here not understanding exactly what the quarter cent sales tax is all about.
Yes.
Please ask questions, stop by the office, and we have a flyer right here on this table that explains exactly what all of that is about. Next, I would like to remind you, as Junior Commissioner Joyner stated, we had our first input committee on January 7th, and that is for the development of our beachfront property, which we refer to as our tall glass of water. The second input committee meeting will be held on February 12th at 10 o'clock a.m. at the Roanoke River Cash Out Center. So if you all know people who are able to come and want to provide the input, please come. If you're not able to come, on that morning, on February 18th at 6 o'clock p.m. at our Office of or Council of Aging, which is just a block down from the Bertie YMCA, we will have a public meeting so that you can further give your input, and that will take place again on February 18th at 6 o'clock p.m.
So. Right. Thank you. Thank you. Next, we have County Attorney's Report. Mr. Smith?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Carolina Rebuilders Ministry lease was emailed to you. Does anybody need a redline copy of it? Because I've got them if you want to see the changes that we made. It's just up to y'all. We're waiting to hear from their attorney, but I'm assuming you will approve the lease as drafted now. The biggest thing is obviously the term that they reduced to 15 years.
Great. And I think all of those matters were addressed satisfactorily between two attorneys, but we still need to wait for their formal response before we take a vote. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. That's my understanding.
Okay.
John, the attorney, got it. nailed down. We're just waiting for the principals.
Great. And I think all the things that we mentioned concerning have been addressed, but we'll present that at perhaps hopefully at the work session. Right.
The second matter is the road safety ordinance. Thank you for passing the amendment. We will proceed to get the other gentleman served. I didn't say anything, but the reason for doing that is to live somewhere else. We can get a sheriff or a private process server to serve and take care of it. Mrs. Bazemore, you had asked about some statutory authority for the thing, and I'm sorry you didn't get it in January, but I got the flu. So everybody's application.
Thank you.
And I highlighted what I believe the relevant sections are. You were asking about the civil penalty. There actually is no limitation on the amount of civil penalty as long as it's reasonable. And I attached a case that says $100 a day is reasonable. And the suit against Mr. Cherry is a payer.
My question was, show me where it is legal to do this.
To fix the road itself?
Yes.
Yes.
But, I mean, we went back and looked at the minutes and said the civil penalty, if I misunderstood, but I mean...
Yeah, you misunderstood.
Okay, well, I also attached a copy of 140, which is the abate statute. And you recall we discussed that. Counties can move to abate anything that it deems to be private nuisance or dangerous. For example, we could remove cars off your property, close your swimming pool, or cut your grass, as well as fix the road. Like you and I have agreed to disagree, I guess we'll find out what Judge Grant thinks.
That's going to be, it is going to be interesting.
I've won them and I've lost them.
Yeah, it does. So. Mm-hmm.
And I have prepared a full contract for, I call it the archaeological exploration, and I did it in such a fashion that I can send it to Sarah. Hopefully she can just fill in the names as the archaeologists come around. I had no idea how many people would be actually digging or exploring the key points of the contract, and I tried to keep it very simple, or that any artifacts discovered, unearthed on the property or recognized to be property of Berkeley County will control the disposition, examination, and display, that you can allow the disposition or display if you want to somewhere else outside of Berkeley County, but as to be in writing, that the archaeologists can go on the real property, which is right in a tall glass of water, but I set it up for any property the county might acquire during daylight hours. Also set it up so that the county, if somebody takes one of our artifacts, they agree that monetary damages are not sufficient, and we can immediately go get an injunction and force the return of the county's property.
A brief explanation to citizens. You might have heard that the lost colony found is supposedly, and we believe this is true, settled here near our property. The original site was not on Bertie's property. It's called Site X, where the Coastal Land Trust owns and now turned into a state park. But we allowed the same folks who are doing exploration there to do exploration on the county's property, on a piece that we own, that you own. And they did a dig there, and they found a significant number of artifacts, even more than were found on Site X. So that's interesting for us, because you own that property, and that property is going to become, over the years, a tremendous opportunity for us to draw citizens here who want to see that site and know more about it, where the lost colony settled. So that's a nice piece, and we want to make sure that everybody knows that we own everything, you own everything that's found there. Makes
and
sense.
Add to the, just let everybody sure. know, one of the key things they found is they actually found a pipe that the end was broke off on, but the bowl of the pipe was still there, and it's dating back to the time.
Lord, I have a question. So they've been out there digging for quite some time. what they have found thus far, is that under this legal agreement?
Well, it wouldn't. This contract wouldn't control it, but it's our it's the people's property, okay. No matter what. I was just formalizing it as you asked us to do at the December meeting. I mean, it's Berkeley County property because it's your land, and you can't come on my land. Back to the Constitution, you can't come on my land and take my property under the North Carolina Constitution or the state. I would think it would be a good idea, perhaps, to go ahead and get whoever's doing it. It's very innocuous. It doesn't impose any penalties on anybody. It just recognizes that we control our property. It is the people's.
And when we allowed them to come, we thought that was understood, but this actually puts it in black and white that it actually is. So, you know,
and I told you, I wasn't really joking. My knowledge of archaeology is in the Indiana Jones movies, but I mean, there are some unscrupulous people. And I'm not saying we have any, but some of that stuff has great value.
Absolutely. Great.
And the final point being the closed session minutes, I reviewed 5 years worth of them this afternoon, which is about as boring a thing as you can possibly do. And then I called Sarah and went through them. Jonathan and I will be trying to case for Duplin County next week about the world's biggest turkey plant and what's its value. So Cliff will be at your work session.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Thank you very much. Okay, that includes a formal portion of our agenda, but as I said at the beginning, we have a public comment section at the end. So if anybody, any citizen has a concern, you must limit this concern to 3 minutes. So you can come, give your name, give your address, and give any comments that you'd like to make.
Good afternoon. I'm sorry. My name is Earl Hoggard. I live at 1006 Taylor Street in Windsor, North Carolina. I have a concern for the Second Amendment stuff. I don't care the stance of anything, but my concern is, Mr. Chairman, you told Mr. Olney and the committee to get with the other 50 counties with the attorneys to see what they did to help their county pass this law. And from what I understand, everybody that's sitting in that seat is appointed by us to do that for us. So instead of this man making a living to support his family and to support you, why don't you look for it? There's 50 counties. All you have to do is just go to one or go to five or go to 50 of them if you want to. Yeah. All we're asking is that you support the Second Amendment. Mm-hmm. If something from the state comes across your table and it says that it's going to infringe on our Second Amendment, all we ask you to do is support it. We're not asking you to break the law. We're not asking you to enforce a law. All we're asking you to do is support it. That's it. That's plain and simple. I can't help that the wordage or whatever else is on that thing. It may be exactly what you said. You can't enforce it. All we're asking you to do is stand up for us. Mm-hmm. We don't have a voice when it comes to the state. You guys do.
Now, Mr. Owensby asked if it would be beneficial to us if we were to look at those 50 states, 50 counties
I
in terms of what...
correct that. I asked you if you were willing.
Right. Well, and as I said, any ordinance brought before us by citizens, then we would certainly consider it. I'm not sure that it is our place as a board to determine that if this ordinance or to research any ordinance and pass on. That's for the citizens and people to bring to us. And we will try to respectfully, and we can have disagreement, but we cannot pass. I don't believe in passing anything that we can't legally enforce. It wouldn't be meaningful anything. Again, I have no argument about the Second Amendment. I believe in the right of any citizen to bear arms, right? But that alone does not give us authority to recommend something that we can't enforce. So if you, my personal opinion is, if you can bring me something that we can, in fact, enforce and does not limit some restrictions to that, right? I'd be for it. But every one of us has to make our own personal determination. That's why I was elected to do that, and I try to do that in good conscience. And I think everybody else.
So basically, you want me to go to these 50 counties and you guys do nothing?
I'm not asking you to do anything. But if you want an amendment passed in this way, yes, do that.
Well, I heard you say also that there would never be a law that would infringe on the Second Amendment. Well, if you've done any reading at all, Virginia has passed numerous laws.
And North Carolina has not.
Yes.
And North Carolina has not.
HB 86 is on the books.
What I'm asking you is, when it does come, you support them.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, that's what I'm
have you read? Have you read the 2013?
No, sir, I have not. I
just read it real quick?
Yes,
okay.
Sir.
It starts out, and again, Andrew, I know you read it. Okay, because you and I have discussed.
Yeah.
Okay, resolution to support the Second Amendment right of the people to keep and bear arms, and this is the second part, and to request legislation to exempt certain records of the Sheriff's Office from the Public Records Act.
As I said
that
earlier.
That was 2013. And not only does it mention it at the top and label it at the top, there's three other statements in here that say this. Third paragraph down. Whereas the Burke T. County Board of Commissioners supports the Second Amendment right of the people to keep and bear arms. That's the 1, 2, 3, 4th paragraph.
Same thing the Constitution says.
Fifth paragraph. Now, therefore, it be resolved that the Burke T. County Board of Commissioners hereby goes on record supporting the Second Amendment right of the people to keep and bear arms. This is 2013, signed off. I voted for this. Okay? This is what the deal was in 2013. Yeah. Okay?
And I bet you money, if someone brought a petition that says that this county would support the Second Amendment right of all citizens to bear arms, everybody here would sign it. But that's not the issue. The issue here in this thing is that with no restrictions and with language that we can't enforce, that's what makes it problematic for me.
I just have a problem. You told him to go to the 50 counties when you're here. I represent him. You work for.
Yeah.
That's all my concern.
Thank you.
I want to say very quickly, I probably won't take my 3 minutes, but I want to thank you for at least putting it on the agenda.
Absolutely.
I have my doubts because of the 2013. I kind of assumed that it might be just swept under the rug. Because
never.
In my opinion, you're the five of you's easy way out. You can say we've already done that.
We never do that.
Well, we have a sentiment that we feel that way. And so we'll be back. But we're not going to ask you to reinstate the 2013. It addressed a specific issue. You put a sentence in there, and I would like for you to go on record, and maybe this is not time or place to do that. I don't know. I would like to know why you voted no then when you say you would support it now.
Right, because I think we should have a record of
who. But you voted no.
Yeah, because you didn't want a record. You didn't want a record of who owned a firearm. I thought we should have that record, and that record should be available to any citizen to know that. That's what I believe.
So you're in that, you admit that that whole resolution was totally separate and different, and that's my point.
No. There were two pieces on the resolution. Should we bear arms? Yes, I believe that we should, and I'm for that. The second thing was whether or not owners of concealed carry. If citizens should be able to come in and know who has a concealed carry.
We definitely differ on that.
Yeah, well, that's so, we can differ on. I'm sure we do a lot of things.
But we'll be back with another resolution, and I'm open to amending it. Obviously, I'm not going to bring the same one in front of you again. But I will say that in that and in those discussions, keep in mind that this resolution is the people's resolution, just like you told Mr. Hogan.
That's correct.
It is not the county attorney's resolution. He can make recommendations and make it legal in his mind and in his through his scope and his interpretation of the law. This is the people's resolution. Okay. And we'll be back with it, and we're going to keep going until we find something.
Andrew,
I'm willing to compromise.
Bring us something that we have the legal authority, that this board has the legal, because you're asking us for that legal authority. Give us something that we have the legal authority to.
We're clearly asking you to tell through this resolution, people above your head and mine, mm-hmm. that we will not stand for these laws if they're passed. That's what we're
saying.
Say
just that. That'll pass everybody. But that's not what we're saying. Say just that, Andrew. We'll vote for that every time.
That's what
we want.
All right. Everybody heard it.
We're at it. That's what we want.
But we will align ourselves. ourselves, and we have to find a way to use that terminology and put it within the 50 counties that have passed, and it's up to 51 now as of right now. Look, right. So it's coming down the pipe, and we want to be within those counties, right. So we lock arms.
And there's a lot of, you will agree, there's a lot of difference in those counties in the language that they use, right?
There's a lot of variables, but we're going to be within them. In the end, the summation of it is all the same. Okay. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Mr. Chairperson, yes. I won't need the full 3 minutes. Initially, I came to you and I brought some problems with the language of the Constitution. I had some solutions, but I didn't have the time. Three of those solutions that might help our citizens and that would help our county commissioner board is that if we would contact our legislators in lieu of the resolution, and if we would contact our legislators, ask them for funding for increased universal database that would assist with screening for criminal records checks. Ask our legislators for more equipment and resources for our law enforcement officers. Update it. Equipment and resources, and to increase the number of law enforcement officials within our county. And lastly, ask our legislators to put closer locations of mental health treatment centers so our officers won't have to travel so far to get proper evaluations of individuals who might be a threat or a problem with their resolution.
Thank you.
Chairman Wesson, commissioners, my name is Shirley Taylor. I am a resident of the Creekside subdivision. I'm at 118 Pintail Drive. I am the one who initiated the letter to the Department of Transportation in an attempt to get their assistance in getting the road paved. Yes. I have a few questions that I know that you all can address. Based on what I'm hearing from our county manager and the letter that I received, the Department of Transportation at this time is not going to help in any way. Was that your interpretation?
Yes, ma'am. The list of things need to be done before they will answer.
A lot.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. A lot of things.
A bit of history. When this subdivision was being planned, I understand that the owner of the subdivision went before the county commissioner and got their input on how the road should be designed, how the homes would be situated, and all the legal requirements were satisfied. And he was under the impression that the road was going to be paved. So if we purchased the lot, it was with the understanding that within a year, the road would be paved by the county. Somewhere along the way, at that time, it was our understanding, and this is where I need your help, that area was county zone, with the county. Somewhere from the time we purchased and built our homes, it was rezoned as an extra territorial zone. And what that means is, you all know that that's within 1 mile from the city limits, but what wasn't clear was that an ETJ zone, as Dr. Collier said, we're not quite in the twilight zone, but yet no, nobody owns us. We pay county taxes, but the county can't help us because we're in the ETJ zone. The town can't help us because we're in the ETJ zone.
The fact that you're in that zone does not, I mean, we can't help you because general statute says we can't help you.
Got that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. County does not do roads, supposedly. But anyways, yeah.
Okay, so now my question is, when was that subdivision zoned? ETJ, who can give me...
I'm going to refer to our attorney, Laura, because I don't know that. It's long before anybody on this board would have been around.
Well, the extraterritorial jurisdiction of the town in question was established by the legislature, and ETJ's been around since the 60s.
Right. But then Bertie County decided to zone our subdivision.
We don't have any zoning. No, we don't have any zoning.
So the, how did Creekside, if this is the wrong platform, please.
No, okay.
How did Creekside subdivision become zoned in ETJ?
It's not zoned. Extraterritorial jurisdiction is not per se a zoning requirement. The town has assimilated you in for purposes of their zoning, but that's not all that ETJ is about. You're probably zoned R10, which is residential rural, but that didn't have anything to do with the road. If you were 1 foot outside the city limits of the town and there was no ETJ, the county couldn't pave your road for you. Because in 1949, the legislature took, sorry, 1939, the legislature took that power away from the county, and NCDOT took over statewide. Now, towns can pave roads, and perhaps you should go to the town commissioners and talk to them. Well, I mean, if you're inside their ETJ, they can do it if they want to.
Yeah, and that is a big distinction. Legally, we cannot. All we could do was refer you to DOT. The town of Windsor could do it. They have the authority to if they so desire, right? But we couldn't, if we had the money and were ready to do it, wouldn't allow us to do it. All we could do is refer you to DOT, and that's where our limits are.
So I would like to suggest, because I'm listening, it's mighty sad when you pay taxes, but nobody wants to own you. And I think it would be in good taste, even though we were not present during what happened, but it would be in good taste for both boards, the town and the county, to come together. Let's sit and talk about it and help those people out there. See what can we do.
That's a good suggestion.
Because right now she's being bounced from one end to the other.
It's not a bad suggestion. It's not a bad suggestion.
This road safety ordinance, that would not apply to us either. So no matter how bad our roads became, this would not apply to us. Because of, am I right?
No. If your roads were such that they were impassable for safety issues because you are technically in the county, even though you're in the ETJ, then yeah, we could probably enforce that through our ordinance. But that's the only thing. But we're not enforcing it as a road, we're doing it as a safety ordinance because we don't want the citizens to not be able to have law enforcement or, you know, paramedics, anybody else be able to get to you, which is quite different from what we do with the road itself, unfortunately.
Yeah. So you don't have a misunderstanding, though, that the safety road ordinance, it is designed to only bring the road back up to a passable
standard. Which
it
yours is
will not be paved. It's just supposed to bring it back up to a passable standard.
So law enforcement and fire department can get to you. That's what we're trying to do, the minimum standard for a county. And that may be challenged as well. Well, it is big challenge, right?
Yes, soon to
be. Not yet, well, could be. All right.
Well, is it something that the county commissioners would consider coordinating or helping us get a meeting with you all and the town commissioner, because we want to continue exploring all options. There's an option that we form a homeowners association. Somewhere I read that should have been done before they sold the box. I'm not an attorney, but I did see that homeowners association should have been in place.
Well, you can do it either before or after. It depends on what type of organization you're dealing with. You can form one now, or the owner itself, or himself, or herself could have done it.
Well, Michelle, why don't you talk to Alan and see if we can do that? The perfect place may be when we have the town commissioners and the county together as we do quarterly and put it in there, have a discussion. this would affect other people in other jurisdictions as well. So we have everybody at the table, all of the town commissioners and the county people, so we can talk about what happens if it's in Orlando or Roxville, the same situation, right? To see what remedy we could be found.
Which of you will be my contact person?
No, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Great.
My name is David B. I'm from Baker Town Road, Windsor, North Carolina. And I'm not up here to talk about the wording in that Second Amendment. I understand you need to come to a compromise on your wording, but I heard from, I believe, the reverend over here, and maybe you, Ms. Batesmore, I think it was about people that are mentally unstable or shouldn't be fit to own a firearm. Well, from what I can understand, this amendment, if passed, if you all come to an agreement, will be a proactive instead of a reactive measure, as for what happened in Virginia. And from what I understand about what happened in Virginia, they were limiting what I could go and buy. I passed my background check. To me, that's like me getting grounded for what my sister did. And if the background checks and psychological evaluations is the problem, then that should be addressed, not what I can go and get myself, because I passed mine. And with the law enforcement and everyone else, anywhere people assemble that could possibly be a mass shooting or anyone put in danger, the danger to them is not a law-abiding, mentally stable citizen. It's those outside the law and those who should not be fit. And I don't think that's what this amendment is addressing. It's addressing me, a law-abiding citizen.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Get that. Good. Well, if nothing further, I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Favor? Thank you. Meeting adjourned. Thank you all. Coming out.
Lord have mercy.
Whoa. Oh, geez.